It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Jeff Jarvis is here. Aunt Pruitt's in the house. Stacey Higginbotham's here. We'll talk about two Supreme Court cases, one that's bad for cyber stalking victims, one that's good for Google, the AI battle centering on China now, how a movie company plans to use AI to decide what films to make, and what's happening to TCM. It's all coming up next on Twig.
Podcasts you love
from people you trust.
This is Twig.
This is Twig. This Week in Google, episode 722, recorded Wednesday, June 28th, 2023. The Rupert Murdoch of hot dogs. This episode of This Week in Google is brought to you by the AWS Insiders Podcast. Search for AWS Insiders in your podcast player or visit cloudfix.oria.com/podcast. We'll also include a link in the show notes. And our thanks to AWS Insiders for their support. And by Brooklinen. Summer is in full swing, and Brooklinen is here to help you swap out winter warmth for easy, breezy comfort with their award-winning sheets and home essentials. Visit brooklinen.com today and get $20 off, plus free shipping on orders of $100 or more with the code TWIG. And by ACI Learning. CIOs and CISOs agree that attracting and retaining talent is critical. With an average completion rate of over 80%, your team deserves the entertaining and cutting-edge training that they want. Fill out the form at go.acilearning.com/twit for more information on a free 2-week training trial for your team. It's time for Twig This Week at Google, the show where you talk about everything but Google. There'll be a little Google in the show today. Hello, everybody. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you very much for filling in for me, Jason Howell. Last week, I ran out the door, went to Disneyland and VidCon together. Stacey had the week off, too, but she's here today. Thank you, Stacey Higginbotham.
You all left us.
I'm glad you're here, Stacey, because I have questions for you, actually.
Oh, are they about chips or broadband?
They're about home automation, but I will get to that.
Even better.
Yeah. She is the host of the IoT show with Kevin Toefel. Also, her website happens to be Stacey on IoT. So I guess you might know something about IoT.
I know a little something about that.
A little something, something. Also with us, Mr. Ant Pruitt, hands-on photography. I'm sorry, no longer a show, but Ant's still with us. Thank God. He is the media manager of the...
Still here, still strong.
Still strong.
Damn it.
Staying strong. In fact, you're going to big day tomorrow. You're going to do Stacey's book club at 9 a.m. Pacific.
Mm-hmm.
The new
Annalise Newitz
book, The Transformers. Yeah. Then at 1 p.m. Pacific. Terraformers. And then at 1 p.m. Pacific, you're going to interview Hugh Howey.
Yes.
Who is the author of Silo.
Yes. Well, the author of Wool.
Wool, which is...
The Silo Wool. TV series. It's based
on Wool.
Books.
Wool.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be great.
I'm pretty pumped about that.
Now, do you fit in the triangulation chair? Have you tried it yet?
I can sit in those chairs, but man, they're on the dadgum floor. Might as well just sit on the floor.
Well, you do. If you want to sit there, you can take the Dr. Evil chair. That's probably more comfortable.
I still don't know how you sit in that chair either.
Well, what's
Dr.
wrong with
Evil
this?
Chair. That is not.
They all hate your chair. That chair.
Really?
They all say it when you're gone.
Why? After 15 years, it's sculpted to my figure.
Oh, so it has your ass grooves in it. That's what it is.
I can't get comfortable in this thing. I don't understand. That is Jeff Jarvis. He is the Leonard Tow Professor for Journalistic Innovation at the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism at the City University of New York.
May I be so crass as to plug now, because I have...
The day has come.
It's the time.
Tomorrow's the day has come.
And... I just today got a discount code from my friends here.
Now that I've already bought it.
I know, exactly, but they just gave it to me. So it's TGPJJ23US. Gutenberg parenthesis JJ23US or UK.
And where Bloomsbury. Do we use that?
Thank you. 25%
at the Bloomsbury.
If you go to gutenbergparenthesis.com, go to Bloomsbury.
Click the Bloomsbury link.
TGP.
Oh, it's actually on the website.
Jake, put it there.
You don't have to even worry about it. Don't write it down. It's right there. Just copy it.
Oh, nice.
Paste it in. Okay.
My son did that. Good. Thank you.
25% off.
25% off.
Well, I paid full price at Amazon, but that's okay. Mine comes the 30th, day after tomorrow.
It's all good. Supporting the creators.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
And apparently there is already a New Yorker cartoon about Jeff Jarvis.
There you go.
Good, I'm glad you got this.
Historical irony included with every ebook purchase, it says. And look, I'm up there in the corner.
The bookshelves work, too.
Strikes again.
That's very good. The Twig Yacker cartoon. If you're not watching the video, it's in the Discord. We'll put it in the IRC.
Freaking love
you know what? Let's make this the thumbnail.
That's got to be it.
Yeah.
Gutenberg parentheses. Yeah, this is celebration week.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, thank you.
Congratulations, Jeff.
I will be in London Monday the 3rd, speaking with Alan Rusbridger at the Prospect. If you're around, by all means, come. I'll put it up on my blog, on my Twitter feed, so you can find the details.
Nice.
And on the 8th, 1 o'clock Saturday, I will be at the Museum of Printing in Haverhill, Mass., with Glenn Fleischman, Martin Wickery, nice. And Doug Wilson, the creator of the Linotype film.
Nice. This is exciting.
That might be the nerdiest group, like the printing nerd, the nerdiest font print Linotype I've ever heard. I love it.
It really is. It's going to be amazing. Yeah.
Glenn and Marchin are the authors of Shift Happens, a Kickstartered, beautiful 2-volume book about keyboards, typewriters.
The reason we're doing it then is because Glenn and Marchin are on their way up to the press. I think it's in New Hampshire or Maine or somewhere, but they're stopping off at the Museum of Printing, and then they're going to spend like a week with press checks as they print the books.
Wow.
That's quality control, man.
Wow. Our top story this week, it's hard to choose a top story. There was a lot of big stories, but this one I thought was important. And we'll talk about it on Sunday because Brianna Wu, who has been horribly stalked in her life, will be one of the panelists on This Week in Tech. Supreme Court this week decided 7-2 to protect stalkers if they don't know that their threats are deadly. This is a weird case. The case Counterman versus Colorado. A guy named Billy Raymond Counterman. He was convicted under a Colorado anti-stalking law because he sent a ream of threatening Facebook messages to a woman he'd never met. The Colorado law did not require the court to consider his mental state when he sent the messages. It only had to consider his behavior and how the recipient would feel threatened, right?
Which seems to make sense.
Yeah.
But
whether he repeatedly contacted, followed, or surveilled his target in a way that would cause a reasonable person distress. He was, of course, found guilty because she was highly distressed. And by the way, I've been, harassed. Anybody in the public eye has had this happen. I've had it happen for 40 years. I once had a young woman praying for me on my stoop of my house, following me to grocery stores and commenting on my food and things. And I didn't blame her. She was obviously mentally ill. Had she brought a knife,
different story.
I would have felt threatened. Now, here's the thing. The Supreme Court said that if Counterman didn't have any awareness of the threatening character of his statements, it would not be a problem. And in fact, any restriction on his speech would be a violation of his First Amendment rights. The majority opinion written by Justice Elena Kagan said the state prosecuted him in accordance with an objective standard that didn't show any awareness or did not have to show any awareness on his part of statements threatening character. That's a violation of the First Amendment.
But Barrett, in the dissent, did say that someone who's delusional can be dangerous.
Yeah. But by the way, both Amy Coney Barrett and Clarence Thomas have probably had harassers and people attacking them. I know they have in restaurants and so forth.
Well,
it's always been case of the law that if somebody tweets at us something bodily harm, that that's considered a threat and prosecutable. And I think it should be. This sounds like if you're crazy enough not to know that that's a threat, oh, you're all right then.
I think about...
Let Stacey go first because I interrupted her.
Go ahead.
Well, there's a couple things. One is I know that with protesters outside of an abortion clinic, a lot of times they will justify their protests and getting very close in your face and screaming at you as a First Amendment right. But legally, they're harassing you, and it does count as harassment. So I'm really struggling with this because it's terrifying being on the other end of any of this. Mm-hmm. And it's not a First Amendment right. I mean, we talk about, yelling fire in a crowded theater. And so I really don't understand the legal distinction being made here. So I'm trying to figure that out a little bit more.
Jeff Kosoff would say that the fire in the theater thing is actually a misnomer, but we'll leave it to the side.
Probably, yes.
Yes. So I'm very torn on this, Stacey, because I'm a big believer in the First Amendment freedom of expression. I think we head to a doctrine, not just in the court now, but also, with Elon Musk and company, is this belief that free speech means there's no consequence to speech. I have free speech.
Yeah.
But if I libel you, if I cause damage, if I incite violence, there are consequences. Or simply, if you think I'm a jerk and say so, or disagree with me, that's a consequence. But we move to consequence-less speech, and I'm not sure that's first. I agree with you, Stacey, because I'm not sure that's First Amendment, really.
Is this put in place for
autistic? Could you put it in the sentencing?
No, that's the point. Here's what a professor at George Washington University said in their amicus brief. A delusional speaker may lack awareness of the threatening nature of her speech. A devious speaker may strategically disclaim such awareness.
Right.
I don't know.
Right.
Devious. That's a common strategy of the right.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I get this a lot. Oh, I didn't mean harm.
Mm-hmm.
You misinterpreted.
Speaking.
Person should be dead.
I was just pointing out that this is where your house is, and that you don't
exactly
always lock your door at night. And there's an unlatched gate, and you have a dog that might eat.
I'm not advocating violence. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying. I think you're exactly right, Stacey. That's exactly how it's used. The EFF and the ACLU both sided with Counterman and thought that free speech rights were abridged. I think this is insane. Because, the reason you and I, Stacey, know about this is we've been harassed and we've had these oblique threats, which, I think don't rise to the test of Counterman. And so they would be allowed as free speech. You absolutely have the right to say Leo is a complete jerk. You have the right to say that.
Mm-hmm.
And I would never disagree. But if you said, by the way,
you might disagree with that statement.
I don't even disagree with it. But if you say where I live and the door is unlocked, that's a threatless threat. And it's not nice. And it should be you should be liable. There should be, just as you said, Jeff, consequences for what you say. I understand the issue, which is that you have the right to free speech. And
Jeff, with the consequences, we're talking about two kind of different things, right? Free speech is you can have but you can't have free speech consequences from the government. The government can't. So, but in this case.
Well, the government's prosecuting. So that's why.
Yeah, the government's prosecuting this guy. But I'm also this guy
is
not
First Amendment. Yeah.
Yeah. But.
It's not easy.
It is someone's mentally ill and delusional, I feel like you can take a case all the way through, prosecute them and say, if their defense is indeed, I didn't know I was genuinely, I didn't realize I was threatening this person. I feel like that's in sentencing that can come through.
Mm-hmm.
But to strip the ability to prosecute someone for that and to have real consequence for that as terrifying as.
I agree.
ACLU and EFF argued that if anyone can be found guilty of making a threat based on how the threat is received,
There's a point there.
Not how it was intended.
But it's a reasonable person standard. It's not like just like...
You hurt my feelings.
Yeah.
This was the concern that Barrett, Justices Barrett and Thomas had, which is that it opens the door to all sorts of harassment.
I wonder where Kathy Gillis and Mike Basnett came out on it.
Oh, I don't know. I should look and see.
I didn't look it up.
I didn't look at Tech Dirt and see what Tech Dirt has to say. But
it's a classic.
In any
Kathy
event,
kind of case.
This is it. And it was seven. It wasn't close. It was 7-2. Counterman is now off the hook. And so I think this opens the door in a social media era for all kinds of harassment. I mean, the harassers are smart. They know not to make a threat. And that's always been the case.
Yeah, there are smart harassers, and then those are the ones that are truly terrifying.
Yes.
And in all honesty, the smartest harassers probably don't actually want to physically harm you because they're too smart and they recognize the consequence. What they want to do is make your life absolutely miserable.
They know how to get to the edge, if you will.
Yeah.
Anyway, the Supreme Court has been very interesting this
full of surprises. I think I was saying with the voting decision this week, I think that the public pressure on the court has an impact. I think they're trying to prove, no, we're okay. We're all right.
Well,
we'll surprise you.
A number of people pointed out, though, that the way that decision went down could open the door to other problematic issues.
Yes. Yeah, it opened a portal to a bad doctrine.
Right. So...
Opened a portal to a bad doctrine.
Oh, you know how that is. That's like the Guardian of the Galaxy's ride. You're really in trouble now. That's
a good show title right there.
I love it. I'm like, oh, scary.
Google won in the Supreme Court this week. Won in a way. The court rejected a lawsuit. Do you remember this? There was a site called Rap Genius, later just Genius, that was a great place to go to get the lyrics to a song. Right. And they did a clever thing in the lyrics. They stuck some hidden secrets in there, and they found that Google was actually just lifting the lyrics from Genius and putting them, in the Google search results.
Oops.
So the Genius Media Group sued Alphabet, saying you stole millions of song lyrics. They lost in court because it turns out Genius didn't own the rights to it either.
That's what I said at the time. Exactly what I said at the time.
That's not old. That's the old news.
So Genius wasn't saying we have the copyright. They said Google violated our contract by scraping lyrics and boosting them in Google search without attribution, which caused millions of dollars in losses for the website. This lawsuit's been going on for 4 years.
Huh?
Yeah, well. this is the... I think really that's the issue is... These lyrics are floating around, right? Mm-hmm. The copyright holder is the songwriter, the publisher.
Right.
Not Genius, not Google. If that information is in the air, does it matter where Google gets it from? Now, this is kind of goes back to link text because Google is eliminating a click to Genius to get that lyric by quoting the lyric on the search results. You don't have to go to Genius anymore. And that's really what this came down to. A lower court had ruled in favor of Google. The justices did not revive the lawsuit. They didn't give cert to the appeal. So it's over for that. Google's off the hook. But it's an interesting...
Wow. I feel like if you're on the internet today, if your core competency is just being a middleman...
Yeah.
That is not... That is never going to be a tenable business model.
Yeah.
You were like the
drop
shipper of... I don't think so. I think newspapers can create real value.
They can, but their past has been as middlemen when it comes to advertising and to news. Right? We run the AP. You have to come to us to sell your car. Oh, you don't need to do either with us anymore.
I should point out, as often the case with these kind of stories, there is a deeper, subtler legal issue at stake here than the obvious one. Genius was suing... over contractual matter, saying, well, our terms of service say Google can't scrape the site and put the results up. In fact, they say now the Supreme Court has opened the door to people, ignoring contractual.
That would be amazing, actually.
Yeah.
That's like, oh, I just clicked through, or God help you, you didn't actually even click through.
Yeah. So the agreeing to the terms.
Apply that to large language models.
Well, before you do that, because that's a whole nother.
Good Lord, Jeff.
Yeah, where would that
talk about? Yeah. Talk about a sidebar. But before you do that, I just want to point out that federal law, this is a subtlety, right? Federal law preempts lawsuits over issues that are similar to copyright. So Google was saying this genius is bringing a quasi copyright claim. It's not really about the terms of contract. They're kind of saying, hey, we kind of own the rights to these. And I think that the court and the lower court were basically saying, no, the law says very specifically you can't kind of infer some sort of protection because it's like copyright. And that's why they lost. So,
yeah.
Wow. By the way, the White House wanted the court to skip the case, saying it was a poor vehicle to resolve the tension between copyright law and contractual rights. That's an interesting point.
Just copyright is just fascinating stuff. Sorry, Ant.
It's complicated.
Oh my God, I think it's the worst.
Yeah, I agree. It's complicated. All this stuff is complicated, though, right?
Lawyers, and more lawyers. Mm-hmm.
Give me complicated based on physics and hard science, not imaginary legal concepts.
Well, let's get into this AI thing that we were talking about, Stacey. You want a headache? Right. I got a headache you.
So we punch him, Ant. Punch him, right?
This will give you a migraine. We were talking about this before the show. You probably heard a lot
of
it.
Oh, no. No, that was me. You did not see me. I'm like, I cannot with this today. All right. Bring on your scientists you. In their bed about human consciousness.
Yeah, consciousness.
Let's do it.
I won't do it to you if you don't want me to. So we talk a lot about AI. In fact, I'm really pleased. Jason Howell, whose show was also canceled. I'm sorry, both of you guys. It was just lack of interest.
Business.
Just business.
Business is business.
Well, and I'm not, you know, me, I hate business, but somebody's got to pay the bill. and unfortunately it's me. So, I kind of, Lisa and I have to kind of pay attention to business. And, if shows don't get an audience and they don't get advertisers, we just can't keep doing them. And
I appreciate
and it's not you, by the way.
Prudence?
Is that we want to keep everybody employed as best we can. It's not you. You're like the Bob Ross of photography. You are a genius.
I remember
came here, one of our first episodes of Twigs, you said that, and it ended up being a thumbnail. Somebody made a weird
with
thumbnail.
Curly hair.
It was curly like hair. Bob Ross with biceps or something.
Yeah.
Like that.
No, you are. You have this gentle, kind
I'll never forget
appreciation
that.
Of the art, and you're really good at it. But I think it's really more commentary on, because it wasn't the first time we've tried a photography podcast. Catherine Hall and I did This Week in Photography, also failed because I just think, I don't know what it is. Is
it's
it
your audience.
It's our audience. There are other photography shows. Scott Pikelby does a bunch of them that maybe they're doing better. I don't know. I just don't know. But for some reason, we didn't attract an audience. So, and the same thing, I think Android, I hate to say it on This Week in Google, but I think Android, which is still the number one smartphone platform, but phones in general aren't that interesting anymore.
Right. Well, that's what we've been saying on this show a lot, and it was just reality that Jason and company were starting. Jason and company, but the great thing was, so I talked to Jason today, and he said that this title of the show drives him nuts because it's not about Google. Change the name. And Leo likes it, right?
well, it's just, it's Jason not, I don't even did, like ironically, it. I can't change it because...
I know it's stuck.
It's out there. It's what Jason did ironically.
With a name like Smuckers, it has to be good, right? It's just. All
right, Jason had a show about Android, but it wasn't just about Android, right? It was the relationships that he had on that show.
Oh, so well, as with any great podcast, the people are what make a podcast great. You know, Ant, Jason, Wynn, and Ron, and previous hosts like Florence, the newer hosts like JR and Michelle, all these people were great. They had a great rapport, but there just was a dwindling audience, and I think it's just lack of interest in the subject matter. I don't think it has reflection on them. So,
I didn't feel that way. It was a reflection on me.
It's not.
No, I didn't
absolutely
feel that
not.
Way.
So, you know, Ant's going to very much be a part of the network going forward, especially in our club and here on Twig. Jason and Jeff are working on a AI show, which means much needs to be done. And the good news is, because we have the club, thank God we have the club.
Thank you.
The club can subsidize an AI show, even though there's, you know, as any show, when it starts, there's a small audience and no advertising. So this is going to be a club-only exclusive for the time being. And we're hoping to launch it soon. But Jason spent 90 minutes yesterday in the Discord talking to people about ideas. But one of the ideas I thought was kind of interesting, and I've been asking all our hosts this. And Stacey, please recuse yourself if you want.
I'm ready.
It's been my contention from the beginning that AI is very poorly named. It's nothing intelligent about ChatGPT or Stable Diffusion. All of these are computer programs. That the distinction between these computer programs and traditional computer programs, you know, I've written a lot of computer software. You tell the, you know, in traditional programs, you tell the computer exactly what to do. If this happens, do this. If this happens, do this.
Yep.
And computers are really good at doing, they only do, by the way, even today, a computer can add, subtract, do division and multiplication in some cases, can move stuff around, and can make decisions based on a condition.
Mm-hmm.
And it does all of that in concert so quickly that it looks like it's thinking, or at least word processing, or mm-hmm. doing a spreadsheet, or playing a video game, because it's very, very fast. AI is a little different, and I know you're an expert on this, Stacey, because they've started using data and training models using generative adversarial networks or large language models or neural networks, a variety of different well-known techniques. And the difference is that instead of a human writing all the rules, the computer can generate its own rules. So AlphaGo is a good example, which is Google's DeepMind program that learned to play Go by playing a lot of games. They told it the rules of Go, which are very simple, and then it played a billion games in 4 hours and actually taught itself to be better.
That's pretty awesome, because it was doing endless A-B tests.
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome, though.
But it generated, in effect, generated the same kind of thing that a human would write, just a lot more of it, a lot faster. And so it created a rule set. In my opinion, those things are deterministic computer programs, regardless of how it was created, that don't approximate thinking in any way. They just are fast. So it looks like it's writing.
It's regurgitating.
It's regurgitating.
Well, wait. So, you're not wrong here. Except we're talking about intelligence, and I don't think you're talking about two things. We're talking about intelligence, and then you're talking about thinking. And I would definitely agree that a computer isn't thinking. But I would say if you think of intelligence and you define it as being able to develop a system or a way to react and adapt to your environment.
Well, that's a good point.
I would say that AI is perfectly named, because what a computer is doing is you're giving it a set of parameters and it's adapting and it's teaching itself basically how to write its own code.
You're absolutely right. In fact, I'm looking at the definition of intelligence from Oxford. It says the ability to acquire and apply knowledge and skills. That's pretty simple. And you're right. That's exactly what AI does.
But wait till it gets to the next step.
But is it thinking?
There we go.
But we're not arguing that it is.
Conscious.
Well, okay.
I mean,
maybe
your original point was that AI is misnamed.
Maybe the term AI doesn't, but certainly a lot of the ways we describe the output of AI, like it's hallucinating.
That's anthropomorphic as hell. That it's writing.
Anthropomorphic.
But we do that for everything.
Because we're people.
Okay, so regardless. So I'm not really arguing about terminology. What I'm really saying is, just be clear, understand it's not thinking. Mm-hmm. Well, you would agree with that, right?
Yeah, I don't think it is not thinking in the way that we think. I do think it has developed an intelligence in the same way your dog has developed an intelligence.
Well, I think a dog thinks.
Allows it to react to.
Here's what I wrote on Mastodon.
Again, I guess, what do you mean by
I think they learn. I think machines can learn.
Well, okay, now we're getting to the nut of it. Okay, this is what I wrote on Mastodon. Okay. See if you agree with this. Don't kid yourself. Artificial intelligence, and I put that in quotes, is just big tech's way of saying, hey, it's not our fault, it's the machines.
Mm-hmm.
In point of fact, every malign use of AI, face recognition, or, you know, is really just some human composed algorithm doing something that maximizes profit or control at the expense of people. I say don't let these companies off the hook. They're in charge, not the machine. Pay attention to the man behind the curtain.
It doesn't have to be at the expense of people, but sometimes it is.
Well, it can be.
I mean, yes. If you stuck a dog, let's stick with dogs because everyone loves dogs.
Yes.
If I stuck a dog in an environment where they learned how to bite everybody who was black, I don't know why.
It's your fault, not the dog's.
It is. Well, yes. I mean, and I then unleashed this dog upon the world and he started biting everybody it saw that it was who was black. Then, yes, I have obviously trained this dog improperly.
I'm blaming the
Similarly, if my also, Tesla drives into a wall under full self-driving, it's the software at fault.
I'm blaming the software. But I'm also blaming the driver for
letting the software.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, like if I knew this about my dog, if I inadvertently had trained it, I could not just go wandering around saying, "Oh, sorry, my dog is really racist."
Well, the Supreme Court says as long as you didn't know the dog was racist, you're okay.
Well, that's another case.
But that's a different case because she said trained.
Right.
Training the dog.
The ChatGPT lawyer, and by the way, I haven't put it in the rundown, the judge decided the case about him. He blamed the machine. And he said, well, I didn't think the machine would lie. The machine lied to me. It's horrible. And the judge said, no. Fine, you made a mistake. You used the word mistake. You tried once. Once there was doubt raised and you didn't do your job to look up the cases on Google, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
Then from then on out, it wasn't a story.
He doubled down.
What do we got to do, regular folks, to understand that computers are only as good as what you put into them?
Yeah. I want regular folks to understand computer is actually an inanimate box of rocks that we animate with electricity and instruct with instructions written by humans or generated at the request of humans from human data.
Stacy rolled eyes.
This computer did this. I used to hear that a lot.
Yeah, but we told the
whoever's on the board. What did you tell the computer? That was a great edit.
Quick switch to Stacy to roll her eyes.
What to Stacy at just the right moment. Perfect.
Meanwhile, I'm like on the Guardians of the Galaxy. I got my eyes closed and I'm holding on to those handles.
So I think there's a couple things here. I think that people should be aware that AI and these algorithms are only as good as their training and they are fallible. Yes. I think that's really important for everyone to realize. I also think there is a link between the marketing done by tech firms and the end consumer who don't have knowledge of this, and the tech firms are being quite disingenuous. And I do think there's probably a case to be made for them being liable for their marketing. And then once they have assessed an algorithm and know it's bad so like that lawyer in his case, because he's a professional deploying and using the algorithm, he does have some liability here. Mm-hmm. I would argue that whatever legal algorithm he used also has some liability because they're making claims. Liability is probably too strong. Deceptive advertising.
Responsibility. I argue this in my piece that when you put a box there that makes it look like Google, you think you're going to get Google-like results back. And Microsoft associated with their search engine is being irresponsible in giving that impression. I agree.
I mean, Google results are terrible and most people know that now. I mean, part of it is we're really dumb as a species.
There we go.
They used to be good.
That's the Stacey I was
like. They used to be gotten terrible. Yeah.
Yes, they have. But, I mean, we're just not. The other thing is these companies are throwing this out into the world willy-nilly. And it's all like a big science experiment that we think is magic because we still think of computers like calculators that are infallible. Hmm. And they're not.
So,
Supreme Court.
I guess that you probably are in a way saying that it's silly to worry about thinking versus not thinking. Like they're not thinking.
I think it's not germane to the issues that we're facing
exactly.
today.
Yes. Yeah.
It's a fun philosophical argument. And if I were like drinking and we were on a patio and it was late at night, we could have discussions.
Why does everybody, every time I bring this up, talk about that? Even Steve said that. We're not in college staying up all night on
substances. Well, it's kind of a college. I mean, like.
It is a college debate, isn't it?
It's a philosophy. It's a philosophical argument.
But it is. But from a practical point of view, I guess what I want to kind of emphasize is we don't want to get in the hype cycle with AI either.
Right.
And I think part of the hype cycle is the scientists writing letters saying it's a threat to the human species. It's an extinction.
It goes both ways.
I think that's hype. That's like saying...
That's just marketing. That's so marketing. They can be like...
Yes. It goes both ways.
It helps them wash their hands of it, too. I mean,
that was my point. Yes.
There needs to be more middle ground on all of it, you know. Take some of the good.
It's not even middle ground, just a little cynicism. Like, I don't even want to call it cynicism. Just
Skepticism.
Thank you. That's the word.
Yeah.
Well, but it also, it does have larger implications. And I've said this on the show recently, as I've dug into the rat hole that is long-termism, that drives Sam Altman and Peter Thiel and Elon Musk and company. And they argue that we're going to reach artificial general intelligence or super intelligence, and that the machine will be basically as much as a human, better in some ways, and that we can build countless 10 to the 58th made up humans on computers on Mars. Ergo, why does Elon Musk want to put things in your head and go to Mars and have a lot of babies? And so we owe to the future, but we can forget about the present. Because that's no big deal. It's a ripple.
This is also what Ray Kurzweil
said.
This is also what Ray Kurzweil said. The singularity is near. And this
yes, exactly.
If you believe that, the singularity being the point in time in which you can no longer distinguish a human and a machine intelligence. And if you believe that, then, of course, once machines get that smart, they will start designing better and better and better machines at an exponential rate. And, yeah, maybe that is an extinction event. So the reason I bring this up is... I don't think we know what makes a human and what makes consciousness. And I think it's a lot to say that we're approaching AGI. Is that, Stacey, is that right? I mean, you...
AGI being artificial generalized intelligence?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Not the income, whatever.
not basic gross, income. No, just a gross income. No. intelligent machines. Intelligent machines. Thinking machines.
I feel, okay, this is going to sound really like a jerk thing to say. I think this is all a very male problem.
Yeah, it's a boy problem.
And
yeah.
I think it's a problem that is oblivious to, like, it's easy to think about this because the current work to fix things here and now is really hard. So if you can keep building better toys or come up with like some cool philosophy that lets you kick the can down the road without actually acknowledging that you're kicking the can down the road, then
I agree 100%. Not to say that, that's exactly what I've been saying. I agree 100%.
Yes. Yes.
Minus the boy part.
And we have... well...
Maybe
it's like...
I know you agree.
That's why I say bros, right? I say the AI bros, because it is kind of a bro thing.
Because it is. Yeah. It's and media don't quote the women who give it perspective, Gebru.
Margaret Mitchell.
Yeah. Emily Bender and Margaret Mitchell. Yeah. And they never quote them. They only just quote the boys.
And Meredith Whitaker?
Meredith Whitaker. Thank you. That's the name I forgot. Yes, she's great, too.
So I hope you'll have both on the AI show.
That's the whole idea.
I think
it's
a great conversation. I think it's very interesting.
If you promise never to talk about consciousness, I'll visit at least once.
Jason is now running the anti-rundown, things to never talk about.
No, you should. I mean, we should. I mean, it's fun. I mean, I like thinking about consciousness, but I'm also like, y'all, we got some real problems. And the problem, and it also includes, okay, Stacey's going to hop up on a little soapbox for a second, please.
Go ahead.
It also includes the real issue, which is everybody here wants to use AI for optimization for their own end goals, which, I'm sorry, capitalistic society is making as much money as possible.
We're building these machines
to optimize for this in a way and to hide all these other issues. But really, if we built these algorithms to take into account and optimize for maybe... not producing as much carbon, but throwing as much carbon into the air, then we would have different algorithms that would not make us as much money. And we would all as a society hate that, because that's antithetical to how we are kind of currently
wired.
Wired and going, the path we're going down.
Well, so don't get me started on the perverse incentives of late stage capitalism, because that's.
Well, but I think that's a real issue here, because that's a lot of the marketing hype around this stuff is like, oh, we're going to solve all these issues that are actually caused by a lot of the late stage capitalism, like the not accounting for externalities that matter. And so then they're like, oh, shoot, they might see it. Let's talk about it ending the world and this being a threat that way. But really, we just have to make a collective decision to care about something that's not money, and we can use this technology in ways that would really actually be quite helpful, and we might not be having these discussions about AI like being so scary.
Which is what Jason talks about too, is let's talk about the utility. We talked about today about good uses and bad uses and stupid uses, right? And malign uses. But there are good uses. And trying to figure out what that, and concentrate on that. And then you're right, Stacey. This is what the Stochastic Parrots paper says, is also pay attention to the environmental cost. Pay attention to the human cost of people who are training your models for you and looking at horrible stuff. Pay attention to the bias in what you bring in. Pay attention to trying to get ever bigger measurement and losing sight of the ability to manage what you have. That's what they said in that paper, and that's what gets ignored so often.
Well, that's a perfect lead really in. To our AI segment, which is coming up next. We're going to take a little break. Thank you, Stacey. Because you're right.
You were dreading this. You did very well, Stacey.
And unfortunately, it often goes right to that thing of, and Steve Gibson's position was, it's just a matter of calculating speed, RAM, and, just add, as it gets faster, at some point, consciousness is an emergent property, and it's going to just start thinking. And that's for a late night conversation.
I mean, you could stick stuff in a petri dish without any RAM.
Well, and that's called us.
Yeah.
That's called us. Unless you believe God made us, some do, and I'm not criticizing that. I don't happen to. We're just the result of a late stage petri dish.
A lot of science.
Yeah. We're pretty random. It's just a random occurrence. All right. I want to stay up all night and talk about this, but we probably shouldn't, because
let me go get my wine.
Waffles awake. Go get some wine.
Grab my water.
I'll smoke a doobie and we can talk. But first, first, let's talk about our sponsor, right? We have a great sponsor, the AWS Insiders Podcast, a fun, fast-paced, entertaining, insightful look behind the scenes of AWS and cloud computing. Now, this is not your typical talking heads tech podcast. High production value, high energy, unlike us, and high entertainment, full of captivating stories from the early days of AWS to today and beyond. The hosts, Rahul Subramaniam and Hillary Doyle, dig into the current state and the future of AWS by talking with the people and companies that know it best. Rahul's very funny, but he's also a veteran AWS pro with over 15 years experience managing more than 45,000 AWS instances. He is known for pushing AWS products to their limits and for believing AWS is truly the operating system of the future. AWS Insiders is a show that's full of opinions, takeaways, and untold stories about the challenges, innovations, and the mind-blowing promise of cloud computing. Take a look at this. The brand new season just came out. Season 2, Episode 1, Filling the Cloud Talent Gap. They talk about staffing and optimizing your cloud team, how it's a critical step right now, also possibly one of the most difficult. Rahul, Hillary, and their guests discuss solutions to finding, retaining, and leveling up cloud talent. I was really interested in episode 3. It's all about Moderna, the mRNA vaccines, and AWS. Did you know that? Rahul, Hillary, and Moderna's director of data engineering and cloud architecture. This was a revelation to me. Discuss how Moderna depends on AWS and the cloud. Search for AWS Insiders in your podcast player or visit cloudfix.aurea.com/podcast. That's cloudfix.aurea.com/podcast. We'll also include a link in the show notes. And my thanks to AWS Insiders for their support. And now we have no bumper music. We have no trumpets. We have no drummers. But it is time for the AI stories of the week.
Not yet, anyway.
I can do beep, boop, boop, beep, boop.
What? Yeah, see, now let's. What would AI sound like? I don't know.
I'm sorry, like Dave. Our theme music. I can't do that.
I'm sorry, Dave. Here's the AI generated books of nonsense. So, this from Motherboard. AI generated books of nonsense are all over Amazon's bestseller lists. Amazon's Kindle Unlimited bestseller list full of books with titles like Apricot Barcode Architecture and Jessica's Attention. Now, Amazon woke up to this and has pulled most
how
of these.
Did it become? I'm not surprised they're there. How would they become a bestseller?
Because if you advertise them on.
Yeah.
Oh, how do they? Do they?
I don't know.
How?
Amazon's Kindle Unlimited Young Adult Romance bestseller list was filled with dozens of AI-generated books of nonsense on Monday and Tuesday. As of this morning, Amazon appears to have taken action against the books rights Motherboard's Vice, but the episode shows people are spamming AI-generated nonsense to the platform and somehow finding a way to monetize it.
Oh, well, it could be with Kindle Unlimited. If you download somebody's book on Kindle, if I, as a Kindle Unlimited subscriber, download a book, they
cost you nothing.
Get paid for it.
And it costs you nothing, yeah. So probably they have Click Farms, right? Who say, okay, probably. You know, here's $100 yep. bucks, download 1,000 or 10,000 or 100,000.
Prigozhin has to do something now.
I was just going to assume it was more of the idiocy of our society.
Who's Prigozhin?
Thank you, Stacey.
I don't even know what you're talking
Nerd.
About.
Nerd. What are you talking about?
Did you follow the news?
The what? Oh, no, you know I don't watch news.
I apparently don't
Prigozhin.
Either.
Ran the Prigozhin who was going up against Putin ran the IRC.
Oh, I didn't know that's how you pronounce Prigozhin. You pronounce that Prigozhin?
Prigozhin. I put the extra syllable.
Prigozhin.
Oh, you mean me a second? I was like, I think he's talking about that.
The
dude.
Rebel guy.
The coup leader.
The coup cook.
Okay. How do you pronounce that?
Former hot dog salesman turned.
Is that the coup that didn't last?
Putin adversary.
Right.
Okay. Prigozhin. Prigozhin.
No.
Yevgeny Prigozhin.
Yevgeny
Prigozhin.
Okay.
Prigozhin? We should stop right now until we find like someone who actually speaks
If his
Russian.
Name comes up in an ad, Leo will get it 100% right.
I always right. get it right then. No, it's I'm looking at the Russian. It's Prigozhin.
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 That's what I said.
Not Prigozhin.
That's what I said.
Okay, you said Prigozhin.
I put in the extra E in at the end. I
still understood where Jeff was going with that. So.
You mean the rebel?
Oh, gosh.
Okay, rebel guy.
That was an Irish accent, but go ahead.
That's no Irish. Is this? I was using a Russian accent. Yevgeny Viktorovich Prigozhin.
Jammer B shaking his head back there.
Where were we before we started talking? you were introing a story. Oh.
Hot dog seller who rose to the top.
Most popular
he was going to do the AI.
Here is one of Prigozhin's hot dogs. Oh, I boy. Save it for show.
What the hell?
Dude, that looks like a prop. That doesn't even look like food.
Why did you happen to
that
have
that? Was for lunch?
Because like I knew you'd prop. Say Prigozhin. Okay. Anyway. So that's what's happening on Amazon's Unlimited. There are a lot of... What are you surprised that people would then use AI to generate a bunch of junk, nonsense? Let's talk about China, because this is one of the things I mentioned to Jason, and you know, we're talking about AI, is it's behind this now, the new Iron Curtain, but you've got to think the Chinese government is working hard on AI. This story from Bloomberg, billionaires and bureaucrats mobilize China for AI race with the U.S. Now, their position is, yes, of course, the Chinese tech sector is very interested in AI, but they're somewhat behind. Nevertheless, there's a considerable amount of investment. I'm not so much worried about private industry as the government, Chinese government using AI. And I have to think they've got some stuff going on.
Well, if we call AI just AI, then they're already using like face recognition and
social credit,
all kinds of other algorithms to track law breaking and that sort of thing.
Yeah. The top flight Chinese talent and financing flowing into AI mirrors a wave of activity convulsing Silicon Valley, which has deep implications for Beijing's escalating conflict with Washington, writes the hot dog vendor.
So are you saying, or the people in this piece saying, that the Chinese AI is a threat to us, even though China probably don't give a crap about us and they just want to use it for their own? Their own yard. What they're doing now.
That's a good question, Ant.
And
what is their
priority? It's not clear from the article. I mean, the article says the aggregate size of U.S. deals in AI outpaces China's. They're $26 billion in investments in 2023 for the U.S., just $4 billion for China. But that seems to be talking about private industry. And I have to think that we have no idea how much effort the Chinese government is putting into AI, and we have a lot of anecdotal evidence that they care a lot about it, don't they?
They probably care, but again, I think we're just being a little bit narcissistic in assuming that they care enough about AI to use it against us, where they're probably just care enough about AI to do something for their own
this
good.
This is like the 5G debate where we were like, China's getting into 5G. We don't have our stuff yet. This is both like, what is it called when you're one country, like nativist fear mongering around technology.
Yeah.
Chauvinism. There we go. And then also idealizing a hyped technology, in this case, AI. We could equally throw in like material science and have something really to worry about, because that's how you get like weird nerve gases and new bombs all kinds of crazy stuff. But
this article does say an interesting thing, that one of the reasons private investment in AI in China is slow is because the Chinese government has lots of restrictions on what private industry can do with AI.
Okay.
They would like a monopoly, I would imagine, of AI in the government. So,
strict control, even if it's outside, yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I agree with you, Ant, that I think, if anything, they're more interested in using AI to control their people.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you have a central planned economy, there's a lot of opportunity for AI to do a better job than
everything.
To make things more efficient.
Well,
yeah.
And there is a case to be made that it would be kind of brutal, again, based on how you train your algorithms, but it does cut out possibly some of the corruption.
Right.
You could theoretically, I don't see that actually happening, but it could happen.
It's also relevant to the U.S.'s policy towards AI. U.S. is considering new curbs on AI chip exports to China. There's some serious concern that the Chinese might be using AI for weapon development, for hacking, using it against us.
Mm.
And so while there are no restrictions yet, there are perhaps some thoughts about restricting AI chips from NVIDIA and others.
And is it your view that China's just not the threat that it's made out to be?
My view is we worry a lot about China and how they run their country. And I'm not saying what they're doing is right or I agree with it, I am saying it is their house and their property, if you will, in that country, and they can run their country however they see fit.
I agree. And I think if China is a threat to the U.S., it's an economic threat more than a military threat.
Right.
As seems possible in the next few years, China decides to take back Taiwan, that would be a threat to us in the West, wouldn't it? I mean,
yes.
All the chips in our iPhones are made in Taiwan.
Right. But then that could maybe be a good thing for us in the long run and create more jobs here.
In the U.S.,
We always talk about we need more jobs. Well, stop sending our stuff to China to do.
NVIDIA is responding to a potential curb on AI technology sent to China by creating a special dumb AI chip for the Chinese market. Wow. It's the A800. It has its performance is below the thresholds outlined by the Commerce Department. So yeah, you can have this chip. It's a little dumber. This is for you. The new restrictions that the Commerce Department is thinking about would ban the sale even of those chips without a license.
That's hilarious.
Wall Street Journal.
Stacey, you were going to say something?
Oh, I was going to say, there's a couple ways that could China is no secret to corporate espionage. They could totally steal what they need and then build it on their own. It would take time, but they could totally do it. And two, I don't want us to go, I mean, the benefits of globalization have been pretty clear, and I think it leads to less conflict over time because we're all like, oh, well, this benefits me, so I'll ignore that. And so the way we're going about with this is scary, personally, to me. I don't know. I just, we're not heading in the right direction. I'm like, oh, it's very depressing. Also, you can take dumb chips and do cool things with them and just engineer your way around some of this stuff.
Limitations.
With
I've always assumed
software,
that the Chinese
faster networking
had a big head start on this kind of thing because they were way ahead of us in text-to-speech because they don't use a Roman alphabet. They have a much more complicated, difficult system. And, you know, it doesn't work well with typewriters and things because there's hundreds of thousands of Chinese characters. And so I've always heard for decades that they were way advanced in terms of text to speech and speech to text, which is AI. It's a kind of AI, right? Google's
Again,
go ahead. Sorry.
Instead of AI, we should just call them faster computers. Faster computers and then specialized programs. Because, I mean, that's
Did he actually bite that thing?
Oh, gosh.
It's sausage. There's a lot of salt. It's going to be fine. Leo's not going to die on camera.
No, the thing is, I'm looking at it now, and it looks like a prop. That hot dog does not look real.
It looks
Why are you eating that?
It looks like the sushi that you get in the windows of the Japanese sushi stores that are made of plastic.
At the gas station?
Yes.
Tastes like
what,
that.
What did you have for Wednesday?
Lunch was
lunch
great
day
today, but yours don't look so great.
It's not.
It also, do you like keep it in a drawer?
I mean, it was there from a year ago.
Some people keep whiskey. Some people keep a bottle of whiskey in their drawer. I keep a hot dog in my drawer. Is that so strange?
I'm like, I need a little waffle toaster in my drawer. And I'll just be like, excuse me.
I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that.
Ooh, dude.
Google's DeepMind. We were talking about DeepMind. Now, Google has mushed together the two AI companies that they had into one. Google's DeepMind CEO, Demi Hassabi, says its next algorithm will be better than ChatGPT.
So define better. I mean, that's what there's this arms race here. It's going to be bigger. It's going to be better. To what? I don't know. I don't understand what the metric is here.
Right.
So they did do AlphaGo, which is amazing.
Right.
Right. As we were talking about, they
at playing Go.
Right.
I really want to stress.
Yes. Okay.
It's going to take over the world.
Hey, can you play Go?
Instead of AI,
can you play Go? I ask you. Can your dog play Go?
Mean,
no.
I know the rules, but I am not good.
It's a very hard game. Hassabi says engineers are using techniques from AlphaGo to make an AI system, they call it Gemini, that will be more capable than that behind OpenAI's ChatGPT. So there,
it's more capable.
Gemini is a large language model that works with text, like ChatGPT-4. But Hassabi says his team will combine that technology with techniques used in AlphaGo, aiming to give the system new capabilities such as planning or the ability to solve problems. He's not very specific, but of course it would be over my head if he was.
I mean, what I hear a lot these days is that they're saying the next phase here, and Jan LeCun said this, chat's over, the next phase is reasoning.
Uh-oh, that doesn't sound
That would
good.
Be actual thinking.
Yeah,
so
that would be thinking.
Then we come back to your...
Yeah. AlphaGo was based on a technique this is from Wired, was based on a technique DeepMind has pioneered called reinforcement learning. In which software learns to take on tough problems that require choosing what actions to take, as in Go, by making repeated attempts and getting feedback. So as I said, the way AlphaGo learned to play chess and then later Go was by playing a lot of games. And did it win? No. All right. Well, did it, you know, it's also using...
These things are prediction machines now. They're predicting the next outcome and trying to do better at their predictions.
Yeah.
It's well, in this case, right? So in this case with reinforcement learning, what it does is it's like, imagine a maze, right? So I turn left and then I hit a wall. I'm like, okay, well that sucks. I'm not going to turn left anymore. And then, so actually that's a terrible, terrible. Let me try a different analogy. I'm like that. Abort, abort, no. It's where
inside
you try.
Stacey's intelligence.
I know. I'm
like, we're seeing the algorithm work live before our very eyes, ladies and gentlemen.
It's basically when it's trying to understand its environment and what went wrong when it takes an action. So it's not actually predicting, it's taking an action. It's going down that stream, like in playing a video game or mm-hmm. using synthetic data. And then it's getting feedback that says, oh, like in a game, the game is probably the best. Like, oh, if I keep doing this, I die quickly. If my goal is to stay alive, then I'm going to do this X, Y thing.
You could
and then
argue
that starts working.
That is the whole reason OpenAI put out ChatGPT, because it gets reinforcement from human users, right? That was the whole point, is to get, in fact, they even asked for feedback. How do we do? How was that answer? Was that what you wanted?
Right.
And that is the reinforcement learning part of ChatGPT. But maybe Gemini will have some more efficient way of,
For the large language model for ChatGPT, do they use reinforcement learning? Let's see.
Well, one of the problems that ChatGPT has is that it's frozen in time. So it's September. What is it? September 2020.
Now with the Bing plugin, it can add in information, but it doesn't use that as the training.
Right.
But it can use that other.
Stacey,
I want to go back.
It's possible, but I think it's hugely expensive to update your model on a continuous.
That's why they're too big.
Fashion.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can't do that. So Stacey, going back to we're going to get back to consciousness. Watch out. Mm-hmm. So I mentioned this book a few years ago called "How History Gets Things Wrong" by Alexander Rosenberg. And what he says, to your point, is that the theory of mind is false. That in fact, we don't come to things by having a desire and knowledge and then make a decision. Mm-hmm. And instead, we are doing just what you're saying. We are replaying games, video of life over and over and over again. And we choose, okay, I'll go down that path. Now, if you're an addict, you're going to go down the wrong path because it's the path that's well grooved. If you're trained and go, then you go it's the same thing. So in a way, what you're saying is that the computer's brain, in that sense, to anthropomorphize mm-hmm. it, does operate, according to Rosenberg, like our brain. And in the end, it's all about survival of the fittest. And you don't know why the decision works. Why does it make you live longer than the next guy? But if it does, you win, you go on. There's more of the same.
Yes, sorry. I'm looking at ChatGPT and reinforcement learning, and yes, they do use reinforcement learning. And now I know how. Sorry, I can only do two things at one. No, one thing at one time.
One thing at once.
Yeah, I guess you could really argue that evolution.
Did you eat more of that hot dog?
Yeah, it's good. You can argue. Lisa says that one of the reasons I'm healthier than normal people is because I eat a lot of bad food. And that it's conditioned.
This is an example of reinforcement learning not working.
and you shower less than others.
Shower less.
Well, I was going to say the reinforcement probably is just it's so long term it can't change the behavior.
Yeah, ideal.
Like your negative reinforcement is going to come.
And that's why evolution takes millions of years, right? We are a big computer.
Exactly.
But we've done it, because it's survival, not of the fittest or of the. It's really interesting. That to me, it was the most. My father's an evolutionist. That's what he teaches. He taught Darwin courses for years. He's a marine paleoecologist. But one of the great. And so I should have known this my whole life. But one of the great revelations for me later in life was this notion. It comes from this Richard Dawkins, the selfish gene, that really, the universe tends towards entropy, towards disorganization, right? Except with us, we are heading towards organization. How does that happen? How does it we get more organized when, in fact, entropy is what is a driving force in the universe? And it is the desire of a gene to reproduce and to succeed that forces this organization. It's kind of an amazing thing. If you imagine all you needed to create at one point was one thing that was capable of reproducing itself. That's all you needed. Let's say you had two molecules and they somehow figured out how to make another of the same.
Mm-hmm.
That's all you need to trigger this whole thing, because then what happens is the molecules that are better at doing that outpace the ones that are worse at it, and they become better and then become better. And suddenly you have, instead of entropy, you have an organizational arrow. You move in the direction of organization. John, you disagree with this? You're shaking your head.
Closed system.
Huh? Well, Earth is a closed system.
In the whole, we're going towards disorder.
In the whole, we are. But in a closed, yes, as a whole, entropy will win. Yes. But temporarily, we have a system moving in the opposite direction because of evolution, right? Because of survival of the fittest, or really just really the drive to reproduce. And reproducers succeed. And as they succeed, the more they succeed, the more of them there are, and on and on and on. And you get this bigger and bigger organization. I don't know. I don't know what I'm talking about. Anyway, Warner Brothers is
tech.
Huh? Warner Brothers has just signed a deal for AI-driven film management. We'll just cut that part out. Can we just edit that out? Thank you. I told you my brain was going to be going.
What is a film management system?
Synalytic is the company.
Analytics.
They have an AI-driven project management system. And I love the Hollywood Reporter's lead on this. Resistance is futile. Warner Brothers has become the latest studio to publicly embrace artificial intelligence. But this is a perfect example of kind of link baity.
The headline, but it's, yeah, this is good for them. This is another way.
And it's no threat to anybody.
Right. You're just trying to make a job more efficient, save some money.
Warners will leverage the system's comprehensive data and predictive analytics to guide decision making at the green light stage. The integrated online platform can assess the value of a star, you know, an actor, in any territory, how much a film is expected to make in theaters or on other ancillary streams.
Well, you know, everything becomes formulaic.
We've always done this imperfectly. We've always tried to do this. Humans are imperfect. Sometimes a good movie sneaks through.
We will still do it imperfectly because
we're feeding
people
the data.
Like surprises. This gets back, I guess, to your entropy. I mean, AI can only build on what has historically been successful in the data it has. And you even see this with hit pop songs. Yes, there will be millions of also hit pop songs. And then there will be the random new success that will then drive changes to the album.
And in fact, a Hollywood Reporter raises that exact example. They said nobody thought Joker would be a hit, but it was a $1 billion surprise. Yeah. And no executive could have predicted it. But
it's a huge issue. AI. One of my students works at KPCC LAist, and she was talking the other day with Writer's Strike on. AI is a sensitive topic in LA across the board.
Yes, because of the writers.
Any use of AI scares the writers, scares the directors, scares the illustrators and cinematographers. And so that's where it's going to hit first, I think.
It scares in certain use cases, Mr. Jarvis.
Yes, in their jobs. Cases. So it's the next Silicon Valley versus Hollywood.
But this story, Synalytics?
Mm-hmm.
Is this just project management in the sense that it's telling you like, okay, we need to get the following things and reminding people and then saying this is what we should prioritize and that sort of thing?
Yeah.
Because give the machine an inch,
my Gmail does that.
Your head.
Right. So the idea is instead of executives spending time trying to figure out what a star is worth and what a market can deliver, the machine will do it. In fact, the founder, Tobias Queisser, says artificial intelligence sounds scary, but right now an AI cannot make any creative decisions. What it's good at is crunching numbers, breaking down huge data sets and showing patterns that would not be visible to humans.
Yeah.
But for creative decision making, he says, you still need experience and gut instinct.
Yeah, at the end of the day, the executives can still say, we agree with this assessment.
Right.
Or disagree
or not.
With this assessment.
Or maybe we'll make the Joker. Some executive said, you know, we should make this.
Right.
And he was right. Or she.
I think for most people, gut instinct is actually pattern recognition. We just don't
recognize
that we're doing it.
Mm-hmm. That's what our brain does is pattern recognition.
Yes. That's what Rosemary's point is, too, is we're replaying video on our heads. We see a pattern. And the pattern may be good or bad by others' judgments, but it's the pattern that we choose to go down.
There was
We have theory of mind.
Very famous chess family, the Polgar family. The head of the family, who wasn't a great chess player himself, the father, decided that the best way to become a great chess player would be to see as many positions as possible. Laszlo Polgár. So as part of an educational experiment, he wanted to prove that children could make exceptional achievements if trained in a specialist subject from an early age. He taught his three daughters. He taught his three daughters how to play chess. They homeschooled him. This is in Hungary. They also taught him Esperanto, which didn't work out so well. But he taught him chess. And in fact, all three daughters became chess grandmasters. And one of them, Judit Polgár, was the woman's world champion.
Nice.
And it wasn't based on some sort of childhood ability. It was based on, yes.
It was reps.
And it was reps. And it was, in fact, Polgár put out a very thick book, which I have, that's just thousands of chess positions. And you look at it and say, the move here is this. The more you play, the more you look at these positions, the more you absorb, the better your pattern recognition, the better a player
you're gonna be. Machine learning is consciousness. It's just like
us. Well, what's interesting is, in chess at least, it's the only thing I know anything about, humans aren't capable of the kind of calculations a machine is. So a machine can, in fact, calculate 20, 30, 40 moves ahead.
Yeah.
And it does have to, at some point, assess a position, but it can do much more calculations. So humans actually have to do more pattern recognition than machine because we can't calculate. So we have to, after four or five moves, go, well, that pattern I recognize, I want that. And that's not quite as good, unfortunately, as a machine can do. Machines now beat all the best human players.
Math.
You know, frankly, you could have a program on your phone now that beats the best human players, which is mind-boggling. So we still
do. You still play chess?
Yeah, I love chess. Yeah,
I bet you've
played it in years.
I was much better as a young man, but the more I play, the better I get. And the more positions I look at, the better I am. It's very much about pattern recognition for humans, not. I think a little less so for machines, actually. They're able to calculate a lot better. And that's our AI thing.
Ooh.
That was exhausting.
Thank goodness. Good sound, Stacey. Do the sound.
Nice one, Stacey.
Our show today. Oh, man, I just changed the sheets. I did not want to take the Brook linens off. We only have one set of Brook linens.
Oh.
And I just changed the sheets. Oh, tonight we'll be sleeping on something else. I'm going to have to buy some more is what I'm going to have to do. Brook linen. Sleeping during the hot summer can be difficult, to say the least. Whether you're trying to nap after some fun in the sun or you're just struggling to stay cool at night, Brook linen's award-winning bedding is here to help. Brook linen's mission is to provide you with hotel-quality luxury bedding delivered directly to your door at a fair price. Founded by husband and wife duo Rich and Vicky in 2014 in Brooklyn, of course, Brook linen has everything you need to live your most comfortable life. Easily upgrade your home with quality products and curated designs that will leave your guests swooning. Brook linen, not Brooklyn, Brook linen has been making dream spaces a reality for almost a decade. So they're the obvious choice in making your house a home. Oh, and if you're looking for a natural option, Brook linen features an organic collection. Brook linen is the internet's favorite sheets, and while there's no such thing as the perfect sleep, there is the ideal fabric for every kind of sleeper. Micah chose the classic crisp percale weave. Lisa and I are sleeping on their luxury, buttery smooth, best-selling Lux Satin sheets. Well, we got the sheets. We got the pillowcases. We got the towels. We got the bath mats. We got the whole thing. Build your own indoor oasis to escape the heat. The options are endless. Do yourself the favor of simplifying your shopping by bundling bed, bath, or both together. You can save time and up to 25% when bundling your new favorite home essentials. Wire cutter and Good Housekeeping both awarded Brook linen for their outstanding bedding. They have over 100,000 five-star customer reviews. One reviewer said, quote, I seem to get that wonderful sleeping temperature very quickly and stay there throughout the night versus my older cotton sheet sets. Another said, quote, best sheets in the world, like butter. Brooklyn uses only the highest quality materials for all their products, long staple cotton, so that everything they create is built to last and feels great. I can say it feels great. Shop in store or online at brooklinen.com. today to give yourself the cooling sleep you deserve this summer. Use Twig for $20 off your online purchase of $100 or more, plus free shipping on brooklinen.com. That's B-R-O-O-K, Brook Linen, L-I-N-E-N, brooklinen.com. Promo code is T-W-I-G for $20 off, plus free shipping. Thank you, Brook Linen. Ooh, boy. Ooh, boy. What was the infrastructure bill? 1-point-something trillion, right?
Was this the Inflation Reduction Act? Or no, this was the Jobs and Infrastructure, whatever.
Who knows? I can't remember.
Was that last year?
That's the problem, right? Somebody, they've got to do a better job of marketing.
Was that last year?
Last year.
Timeline. Okay.
Among other things, a lot of money allocated to improve broadband. Biden has announced an additional $42 billion high-speed internet initiative.
Yay.
Acknowledging, finally, the reality that if you're not connected, you're kind of left out in the 21st century.
Yeah.
I've only been saying that for, 15 years?
Oh, yeah. Wow. The plan, the goal is to give every American household access to high-speed internet. Every American household
should be a right.
Access by 2030. It should be a right. Each state will receive a minimum of $107 million, 19 states over $1 billion, Texas, $3.3 billion under the program.
That's amazing.
Just so they can censor it. But, yeah,
I know. More than 7% of the country, more than 8.5 million homes and small businesses are underserved. The government's standard is, and it's a pretty low standard, 25 megabits download per second.
Yeah, they last changed. I mean, it was a big deal when they upgraded it from.
Wasn't like five at 10. One point?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. I mean, the definition of broadband has always lagged by the actual need for broadband by about a decade.
What would you say now? I would say 100 is. Should be like table.
I would say 250.
Wow.
Actually.
Yeah.
Well, because of streaming? Think about what we're not just streaming, but also multiple people in a household.
Yeah. What if I said? How about if I said this? 50 megabits per person in the household.
Okay.
Or user, not person, per user in the household.
You and your 30 devices.
Switch.
You and your 30
not devices,
because
that I'd really be. I need, but I have gigabit at home, and that serves us.
Yeah.
We got that during COVID when Lisa was Zooming, I was Zooming, Michael was going to school via Zoom. We needed a gigabit, and we hardwired all the workstations and all that stuff. Anyway, a lot of people don't have that, obviously. And I think, given that it's going to be government subsidy, it's reasonable to say, look, 25 megabits per second for downloads, 3 megabits for uploads. Yes, that should be higher, but it's a good minimum. Anyway,
how much of this comes from satellite versus?
Ah, that's a good question.
Satellite can't do.
This is the sad thing about this. And of course, you know that the big telecom companies are very active in their lobbying. And while a lot of this, I think, should go to rural, ISPs and municipalities.
Yep.
The Comcasts and Coxes and AT&Ts of the world are lobbying like hell, and I think they're getting the lion's share of this money, sad to say.
Yep, pretty sure of it.
Well, there's a couple things happening. Yes, they're trying. The argument also, if you are in a rural area without access to broadband, one of the reasons you don't have it is because it's broadband historically, up until about 5G, some 4G, you haven't been able to deliver it wirelessly at the speeds that even at 25.3, right? And so you'd have these small rural ISPs that would come up and try to deliver it, but then they also had to pay for backhaul back to Comcast.
Right.
And Comcast would be like, you want backhaul to the fast real internet? Yes, we'll charge you a lot. Or they wouldn't even offer it. So wireless with 5G, and Verizon's actually doing it. They're actually doing wireless fixed wireless broadband to homes with their wireless service, which allows you to do it economically without having to dig trenches, which is super, super, super expensive. So I don't know what Comcast is doing. They're not going to be laying cable in those areas, I can't think.
Well, if they do, they better put shark repellent on the cables. Did you see that? First, it's the orcas attacking yachts. Now it's sharks attacking undersea cables.
Orcas. Oh, sharks have always attacked undersea cables. Like we all, like every few years, everyone's like, "Holy cow! Our internet is hugely reliant on these cables under the ocean, and ships, and earthquakes, and sea animals all disrupted." Ah, and then, yeah,
yeah.
Sorry.
So there, take that, sharks. Actually, the story was that Google puts Kevlar on its undersea cables to keep the sharks from biting them. But they keep biting them, but now they just break a tooth. So that's good.
Yeah, it's like the EMF. Isn't it the frequency that they're like...
Oh, there's a buzzing or something?
I don't know if it's buzzing, but... I mean, think about how a lot of undersea creatures have, I would call it extrasensory perception to deal with undersea.
Yeah.
Like life under the sea, they need different magnetic sensing. I don't know, but yeah. Whatever it is.
You're right. 1987, the New York Times reports sharks have shown an inexplicable taste for the new fiber optic cables that are being strung along the ocean floor, linking the United States, Europe, and Japan. Now it seems Google is biting back, according to Network World's brand dinner. Look, you want to see a video? This is a shark biting an undersea cable. Here you go. This is an old video.
Like a cat.
Yeah. Here it comes. Here it comes. Watch out.
Dun-dum. Ooh, looks like a tasty dun-dum. Eel.
That's no good.
Oh, that tastes horrible.
I don't want to eat that. How about this one?
I thought this was Twizzlers, not Red Vines.
Oh, maybe not. Maybe he's not going to eat that one. Wait a minute. Here's another one. Dum 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 dum. No, he's going to swim under.
No, you see the shark like a computer learns.
He learns. They use polyethylene protective yarn. On Monday, Google infrastructure czar Urs Holzel. I don't think that's how you pronounce it.
Urs Holzel.
Urs Holzel. Is that how you say it? Urs Holzel. Yeah. Announced the company is helping to build a new trans-Pacific cable system to connect the United States to Japan at, get ready for the speeds of, 60 terabits a second.
Yeah, but that's like all the internet traffic coming from Japan.
I know. I know. Why are sharks attracted to undersea cables? Slate says unclear. Several outlets have pointed out that sharks can sense electromagnetic fields. So perhaps they're attracted by the current. Alternatively, a shark expert from Cal State Long Beach suggested to Wired, they're just curious. They just want to know what happens when I bite this. If you're a shark, that happens a lot.
That's animal learning.
Animals.
Yeah.
Anyone with a dual expertise in...
That's animal intelligence.
Chondrichthyan behavior and electrical engineering is warmly invited to offer a more compelling explanation in the comments below, says Slate. And good get on that word. Chondrichthyan. Chondrichthyan. I guess that means shark. I don't know.
I was going to say, does that mean shark?
Yeah. You could just say shark. And I have to look it up. No. Why use shark when you could say chondrichthyan?
I mean, if you know that word, why not?
Why not?
Otherwise, you're just wasting your brain space.
Chondrichthyus is a class that contains cartilaginous fishes that have skeletons primarily composed of cartilage. Well, I'll use that when I'm on Jeopardy. That's for sure.
Sure.
It's a cartilaginous fish.
Chondrichthyan.
Why do they?
Chondrichthyan.
Yeah. Thank you. I'm probably mispronouncing it. And let's see. What else? Okay. Now we're down to the seeds and stems. So let me take a break.
Seeds and stems. And
we haven't done the change log. I just want to bring that
we
up.
We will do the change log. And then we will pick through the seeds and the stems for some juicy stories. You never heard me say that before?
No.
Yeah, but I got it.
But it just clicked.
Want a bite of my hot dog?
No, that's okay.
It'll calm you down.
Got an old hippie here.
Oh, man.
Mm.
He said seeds and stems.
It really does look like, except for the bites now.
Dude, it looks like a prop. And I'm sitting like right next to you.
Whoa.
Look at it.
Do you not have any, like, condiments on it? I mean.
That's how it came. They brought it in.
But don't you put... did it not make it into the drawer?
Dropped it.
It's all right. The carpet's clean.
Yeah. And the ants won't eat it either.
No, I ordered it with The Works. What does The Works mean to you?
Everything. Yeah, put everything on it, right?
And then it came with nothing.
Just the hot. Is there like a separate packet of containers,
no,
like with sauerkraut and everything?
Nothing. Maybe I don't know. And then
I think it's time to call out that vendor.
Burke had some sort of weird explanation. He said, well, if they'd put The Works on it, it would have been seven different things. And I said, yeah.
That's why you call it The Works.
That's why it's called The Works.
Come on, Mr. Burke.
Because you don't want to taste the hot dog.
Come on, Mr.
Hey,
Burke.
I have the Pixel tablet right here in front of me. You didn't even notice.
Yeah, but you should talk about that.
I will be talking about that. We have a Google changelog. There's still a lot more to come. Although I do have an obligation to get the show over in the next 6 minutes and 45 seconds.
Really?
Yeah.
There's no way.
I made a promise to my wife, holy vow.
That soon? Hold on. How long have we been talking?
Even Stacey's.
An hour 23. She said, can you get the show in under 90 minutes? And I said, no problem. Watch.
No.
Oh, dude. You can't even finish your ad in that time, but go right ahead. I'm just going to sit back and watch.
And our ad, our sponsor appreciates that, too.
Actually, this is, I want to give this guy full shrift because it's our studio sponsor, the great folks at ACI Learning. Thanks to ACI Learning, the days of boring, archaic training methods are finally over. Lack of meaningful impact shows up as a low engagement. That translates to suboptimal performance, and you don't want that. You and your team deserve to be entertained while you train, to be empowered to keep your organization safe and secure. It's simple. If your IT training isn't raising your team to the level you aspire to, you need ACI Learning. With the training industry's completion rate just 30%, ACI Learning blows its competitors out of the water with an over 80% completion rate. Now, this is the format that IT professionals want. In today's IT talent shortage, whether you operate as your own department or you're part of a larger team, your skills must be at the bare minimum up to date. 94% of CIOs and CISOs agree that attracting and retaining talent is increasingly critical to their roles. ACI Learning helps you retain your team and entrust them to thrive while investing in the security of your business. ACI Learning keeps your skills up to date with over 7,000 hours of content available and new episodes added daily. Your enterprise needs cohesive, cutting-edge training to keep your team compliant and ahead of the pack. Choose an existing course or let ACI Learning combine modules for a tailored solution. You can even let them custom design a course to address your specific needs. ACI Learning's private boot camp will train your team alongside the most passionate and best subject matter experts certified in the latest versions of each certification. Full access to advanced reporting via ACI Learning's Pro Portal. You could track and manage your team's results, manage seats, assign and unassign team members for customized courses relevant to their position, and access monthly progress usage reports. Visual reports provide immediate insight into your team's viewing patterns and progress over any period. ACI Learning trains thousands of aspiring tech and cyber professionals annually, including providing scholarships to individuals from diverse backgrounds and those transitioning out of military service into civilian careers. Join the always-on tech training solution. In a rapidly changing world of technology, ACI Learning is in the studio every day to record and share relevant content that impacts your business. Be bold. Train smart. Learn more about ACI Learning's premium training options across audit, IT, and cybersecurity readiness at go.acilearning.com/twit. For teams of 2 to 1,000, volume discounts start at 5 seats. Fill out the form at go.acilearning.com/twit. For more information on a free 2-week training trial for your team, go.acilearning.com/twit. So I did not order the Pixel Fold, but I have to say, Ron Amadio at Ars Technica, who did, his broke in 4 days, so that's not a really good
Maybe
review.
His is the only
but maybe
one.
He didn't handle
it's a little
it
rough
right.
Maybe it's
his is good reviews,
right? Nobody else really been griping about it.
People seem to like the aspect ratio of the screen because it's more square than maybe the Galaxy Fold, which is taller.
Mm-hmm.
Paul Thurrott just got his, and I asked him to do a little review. He bought one. He's trying to decide whether to keep it, and he's leaving to Mexico in 5 days, so he has to decide before he leaves for Mexico.
Pressure.
I did order. You might remember during the Google I/O, this went on sale. The Pixel tablet because I liked the idea, and Google had talked about this earlier, of a tablet that docks on a little base.
Pogo pins.
Via pogo pins and a magnet, obviously. This is really just like a regular tablet. Unfortunately, a number of people have said that it, and I have to agree, it's just kind of an everyday Android tablet.
Utility.
I have to say, I'm not.
What did you expect from it?
Yeah, well, yeah. Right. Good question, right? We did talk to somebody on Sunday who loves his Samsung Galaxy Tab.
Those have always been pretty nice.
I think so. Those are, if you're going to get an Android tablet, that's probably, but Samsung adds a lot of features, multitasking stuff. This is it's an Android tablet. If you look at it, it looks just like an Android tablet. It runs apps.
Not cheap. Google apps.
It's $500. And I have to say, if you put it side by side with the Nest Hub Max, which I did not ask the tech guys on Sunday, it looks very similar, and its functionality, at least when it's docked, is very similar. So the main thing this has to offer is you can undock it. It's a standalone tablet in addition to, you know, one of these kitchen devices.
That's interesting. It does not have a Thread radio in it.
Right.
It does not have ultra wideband.
Which the hub has.
Right. So it's not performing the functions of a plugged-in tablet in your home.
Oh, that's a very important point. Yeah.
Google. It's not a smart home controller.
It's an Android tablet as opposed to a Fuchsia tablet with those smart home features. Yeah.
Right. It may look similar, but it doesn't have the same functionality. And if you bought it to actually control your smart home in a Matter world, it's not going to.
It's twice as much.
That's an important distinction.
It's twice as much as the Nest Hub Max.
But it is a tablet, and it's a nice tablet. I mean, you don't buy this because you want a smart home hub. I mean, we said that from the very beginning. We're like, this is not a smart home hub. You buy it because you want a tablet.
Yeah, and I imagine the use, and this is certainly how I plan to use it, it's replacing the Hub Max in my kitchen, which we use as a kitchen timer. It still does that because Google Assistant is enabled.
Oh, no, don't do that. This is terrible because what happens when somebody walks by and takes your timer with
you? Oh, yeah.
I'm not telling anybody they can do that. Only I can do that. That's a good point.
This is not, do not use it as a smart home hub. This is not the intended use at all. And I think it'll frustrate most people if you tell them to use it
that's a good point.
Because they're going to encounter that.
Yeah.
Can I see that?
Yeah. You want the tablet or the dock or both?
Because the dock is useless to me. But
it's nice because the dock has a little base, although the speakers in the tablet
are... The dock is useless. It's a $129 charger.
Yeah.
It doesn't have its own microphone.
For now, it's included in the price. Yeah, it doesn't do anything by itself.
Yeah. Basically, you know what Google did here?
What did Google do?
Google was like, hey, let's make a really cool smart home tablet /... smart home hub / tablet. It'll be awesome. And then they realized that the bomb was going to be way too much if they added all this radios and functionality and made that dock anything more than just a charger, like by adding a microphone or any sort of computing into it or radios. So then they ended up with this weird, stupid product that's a good tablet, but has this weird docking thing. And then they doubled down on it being like, this is a real problem. You've got this tablet and people leave it out and they don't charge it. Such a big problem.
Well, I wouldn't mind if Apple did something like this and I could have an iPad. Whoops. He's watching David Letterman for some reason.
I actually clicked on Aubrey Plaza, but oh yeah, it's Aubrey Plaza
on David Letterman.
David
Letterman.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean it's got decent speaker. It's not an iPad, and that's one of the problems I have in general with Android tablets is a lot of Android apps don't really use this. The screen realist, it's Android is not as mature a tablet ecosystem as Apple's.
I asked for it because just looking at it over there on the table here, I was like, that sort of looks like a cheap sort of.
It's a medium. Look at the camera. It's not a great camera.
But I'm holding it in my hand. It feels fine.
It feels substantial.
It just looks cheap.
Screen's decent. The refresh rate's not as good as the Samsung, but it's decent.
This is totally decent. How much was it? Was it $500?
$500 for the tablet right now, for the tablet and the base.
I don't know about $500, but it's
what an iPad would cost. Yeah. I like the idea. I do like the idea of it docking. Dumped it into her gin and tonic all about Android.
Because
it's not a super strong magnet, but it shouldn't be because otherwise,
right.
I mean, I can lift up the base
to try to get it off of there.
Yeah.
But what you said a minute ago, it's not that it's a tablet that docks. It's a whatever you call these desk things that
smart display that separates.
Yeah.
But no,
It's not a smart display.
Yeah. It's a tablet that docks in. Yep. And it should have been a tablet smart display. Yes.
I don't disagree. I think you're right, actually.
I mean, you don't. Kevin tried it, and he's like, "Hey, look, as a tablet, it's fine." And I was really excited about it because I thought it could be a smart display that I could also use as a tablet. And I was like, hey, that's pretty cool.
Those bezels, I'm looking at it from here. That's old school.
Yeah.
Oh my God. You people in your bezels, the bezel contingent.
No, real talk.
Hold up. A tablet needs
just
bezels.
Hold up my phone today.
No, but a tablet needs bezels because you have to have somewhere to put your thumb.
Yeah, I know. But that just looks like a lot of lost screen real estate. They could have given you another.
I will use it in my
bezel
kitchen.
Shaming this tablet.
I have YouTube TV, so I'll put news on there. Sports.
I'd take one. I just don't think it's $500 worth. Is all I'm saying.
I think it's another Google flop. I hate to say it. And I wonder how well they'll do with the Fold. Because honestly, I think Samsung owns that category pretty much.
Bring that price down on that Fold.
I was thinking, though, Stacy, buying the next Flip. We're going to cover the Samsung event. It's, I think, July. They're going to announce a new Fold and a new Flip. And I was thinking of buying the Flip. If I get tired of it in a month, can I send it to you?
Sure. I'll swap phones again with my kid.
They'll like the Flip, I think. I think it's a good phone for people who don't want to... who just want a thing that's relatively small to carry in their pocket or purse, and that's all you need, right?
I don't know. My kid's like an old man. They're just like constantly like,
don't tell them that.
Another phone.
Oh, that's good.
I don't need any more changes in my life.
I love your kid.
So I do want to ask you about a home automation thing.
All right.
Matter?
It is Matter, as a matter of fact. TP-Link has announced new switches, light switches, that are their Wi-Fi light switches, but they are Matter. And I thought, now they're $25 each, and I was thinking, and I asked my wife, I said, would you mind if I replaced all of the light switches in the house with these TP-Link switches? And she said, she said an important thing. She says, what happens when the Wi-Fi goes out?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Don't do that.
Okay.
If you are messing, and I will tell you, I've literally been doing this now for 10 years and experimenting with
connected
light switches.
That's why I wasn't going to buy it till I talked to you. You bet.
The only way you should make your light switches smart is via Lutron. I'm so sorry. You have to buy the Lutron hub if you do it. But pop those babies in. They don't support Matter yet. I really hope they will one day. Most reliable, most functional, freaking expensive, but they support... Because these don't support three-way switches, for example.
Yeah,
you don't want that.
They do have dimmers, but this is exactly what Jason Snell said.
You have to buy a dimmer or an on-off.
Right.
They're relatively inexpensive at like $25 for the switch, and I think it's $28 for the dimmer.
Yep.
They're Matter certified. With Wi-Fi, if your Wi-Fi goes out, you can still use the switch and go bloop, 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 bloop. You're going to have to double hit it probably to make sure.
But you could turn the lights off. Although Jason said with the cassettas, the Lutron cassettas, they work just like a regular switch does.
Yeah, that's why. Just go with Lutron. It's so freaking reliable. I mean, I wish I'm still waiting for a technology that's better than that. And so far, no. Just
so the
Lutron
thing,
all the way.
Of course, the thing that got my eye was Matter. Because then I don't need a special hub. It will work with other Matter devices. I think if I'm going to go home automation in the long run, I should have everything be Matter compliant.
Yes, and I think Lutron will eventually support Matter if it becomes necessary. But for the reliability, for the ease of programming and use, and everything works with Lutron, basically. I mean, Google does, Amazon does, HomeKit.
Even HomeKit, even Apple, yeah.
Has Lutron responded to any... questions?
Oh, I ask them like every week.
And they just go quiet.
Hey, Could you tell me if you're going to bat or they're like, no news on that front yet, Stacy?
Oh, spin, huh?
You'll be the first to know. Like, ugh.
So I promised Lisa I wouldn't do it until I talked to Stacy. And
yeah, don't do it.
And then Jason said, no, don't do it. Now, it is the Lutron switches are a little more expensive. The TP-Link $25. And the Lutrons
are... Yeah, these are like... I bought mine for like $45, I think.
Wow. They have a bigger variety of switches. This is the kind of switch I have in my house now. Oh,
the
73.
Rockers?
Yeah, it's a rocker with and this
okay,
is a
yeah, don't buy them on Amazon. Just go to Home Depot and you can buy like a 10-pack for a more reasonable amount.
That's what I'll do then. Okay.
I'll
need a hub, but I don't mind having I have a Hue hub. I don't mind. The problem is right now I have to have Hue lights in everything I want to control with my voice. What I'd like to do is be able to have all the switches be voice controllable. One of the things that...
You know,
go ahead.
If you are using Hue and you have... Now, Lutron makes a device that you can, like, literally... And I think I just threw mine away.
You can put
it on your toggle switch. So you have rockers, so that's not going to work. If you have a toggle switch, they make a device.
No, I don't want to. I don't want a Rube Goldberg. I want to unscrew. And by the way, you need a ground wire, which I have. I checked.
You do need it.
So I have three wires. But what I want to do is I want to that you couldn't tell that I've done this, right?
Yeah.
And Lisa could still go up to the switch, turn it on, turn it off. She won't know, but I will know that I can then open my phone and turn all the lights on or off in the house and that kind of thing.
Yeah, just get Lutron. And they actually have a device. They actually have one that doesn't require a ground. I can't remember which, like, P645 or whatever version of it is. But if you have a neutral wire...
I have ground. I have neutral everywhere. I checked.
Sorry, not ground. Neutral wire. Sorry.
Yeah.
If you have a neutral wire, just get the ones with the neutral wire.
Okay.
But yeah, Lutron.
$63 compared to $25.
Again, go to Home Depot.
I'll go to Home Depot. I don't need the wall plate. I just need the switch. I'll use the existing wall plate and then... put the rocker in the wall plate. Okay. All right. That's why you are here.
Shopping with Leo and Stacy.
Shopping with Leo and Stacy.
Question?
Yes.
And buy them all at once. And when you buy them all at once, just get your electrician to come out and install them. I mean, if you're going to do them all.
I could do it.
Oh, man. What? Oh. Your fingers.
Do you have to turn off the power before you do this?
Yes. Yes. Please do not wire these.
Really?
Oh, Ashley, no.
Please do.
Ashley,
this is 120 volts. I mean,
if I wear rubber sole shoes, would that be okay?
No. Go right ahead. Let me know when you do it.
I'll bring
the Twit cameras.
It will be unpleasant. Okay.
Buzzing Leo.
And the other thing, if you have three-way switches.
Yes. What's a three-way switch?
Like if you have a switch in your kitchen that on one side of your kitchen that controls your kitchen and on the other side you have a switch.
Lots of three-way switches. Yeah.
So for those, so the TP-Link wouldn't even work for you because they don't actually support three-way switches.
Well, then forget it.
But with Lutron, you're going to want to do the smart switch in one spot and then you'll get the like little Pico remote. And you'll install that where the three-way portion is.
We already have some video of me doing the install here. And I think
flashing light warning on the video.
Flashing light warning. Seal of approval from Aunt Pruitt. All right. Well, this is good. This is why this is why I do the show, so I can ask the smartest people in the room big questions like that.
And me.
Big questions. Could you consult on my home lighting project?
It sounds like I probably shouldn't do this. It sounds like trouble, big time.
Oh, no, it's great. You know what? We actually use lights in our house instead of shouting at my kid. So, and I programmed...
Wait a minute. You better explain how that works.
Light signals.
So, like, to get attention, like, downstairs
blink
when my
lights?
Kid is downstairs.
You blink?
I blink their lights.
Blink their lights?
And
bring waffles.
They know,
she does, she
and
does
they
Morse
know,
code.
Do you do Morse? Yeah, you go on, off, on, off, off,
no,
off.
No. It's just a little on, off. And the cool
and then
thing
they go,
is,
oh, mom wants me, and they come downstairs?
I've seen several parents.
Well, they come upstairs, yeah.
Oh, that's
and
nice.
It's nice because we're not shouting at it. It's like, come to dinner, whatever. And then you can do it. So I have a little remote that controls both the downstairs lights, the lights in their room, and then I even set up one in my husband's room now. So now I have separate remotes to like call various people.
Two blinks, bring waffle. Three blinks.
My mom, when I was a kid, because she got tired of shouting, dinner, got a little bell and rings it. And now every time I hear a little bell, my mouth waters.
Well, you're an animal. That's why.
I'll just call you Pavlov.
Can I ask you a shopping question real quick since we're on this?
Yeah.
Son Jake needs an air purifier. You guys were talking about what you use. What do you recommend?
Ooh, get the Coway. Oh, my Air Mega.
Say it again.
Coway Air Mega for big rooms or just the Coway for not big rooms?
Yeah, we have the Air Mega is expensive. It's a big box, awesome. But does the whole. So we have that in the house.
Oh, that's not my Air Mega.
No, I know. Mine's square. This is the new. There you go.
Yeah, oh, mine's this that one. Guy. Yeah, the large space.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah. And then, but they're expensive. And then this is the one that I ordered. I told you this story. I ordered it refurbished on Amazon to save me a lot of money. It didn't come with filters. I used it for a year during COVID without the filters because I didn't know.
Whoops.
I didn't look. I just got it. I opened the box, set it up. Hey, honey, we're protected. And then
I protect you and then as usual, says Lyle.
And then a year later,
the
light
protector.
Comes on the thing and says, new filters. I said, great. I ordered filters. I opened up and said, there's no filters in here at all. So basically, I had a fan blowing the air around for a year. So tell Jake, get filters if it doesn't come with them.
Right.
But you can get the little thin ones. We have those as well. Those
161 square foot for the 200M. That's what that says.
Yeah. It's basically a simple HEPA filter. But for smoke, like, are you worried about Canadian fires? Is that?
No, just allergies and stuff.
No, allergies. Yeah, it works great for that.
Yeah, run it. So close the door in your bedroom. Mm-hmm. Run it for an hour on high before you go to sleep. And then just put it back on sleep mode. And then it's awesome.
Oh, you're good.
Sounds like you know.
Yeah.
Now,
I'm looking up Coway right now.
If you use
air purifiers, water filters, and Biden and bidet toilet seats.
Ooh. Let me tell you something. Until you get a bidet toilet seat, you don't know living. You don't know living. I'm telling you. There's two things we miss. When we're in Disneyland, we're staying at one of the crappy Disneyland hotels, and we miss our eight sleep, thing that warms and cools the beds. And we miss the thing that the Toto toilets.
Spritzes your rear.
Keeps you fresh and clean.
Yeah, I've been in my search history. That's scary.
Oh, highly recommended. They used to
You didn't tell us about VidCon yet. You didn't say anything about VidCon.
Okay, so the big takeaway for me that I thought was... So VidCon is... John and Hank Green started this now almost 15 years ago. Was it 2011, Jeff? 2013? Something like that. As a way to bring creators... YouTube creators.
On YouTube, yeah.
Together and they're with their audience, and so there's a big fan contingent of young. And you told me this, Jeff. You warned me. A lot of teenagers there, but then there are a lot of creators there. And now, of course, it's since been bought by Viacom, so it has a slight. There's an industry track. That's what Lisa was there for, the industry track. That's on the third floor, well away from the children. The second floor is the creator track, and then on the ground floor is the conference. And there's
The fans.
There's booths. There was a guy. There was a long line trailing around. And I thought, oh, this got to be somebody big. And it was some Minecraft guy who wears a mask. And he's standing there signing autographs in his mask. Or doing, actually, more likely selfies. His mask. And people were just all of Twitter about this.
Well, you get wristbands and you get a lottery as to who you sign up and you ask for people. And then you get choices. And so you get like three guaranteed selfies.
Then and then there are some little kind of auditorium sections inside the conference area. Right. There were two of them. And they hold maybe a couple hundred people. There were two side by side running at the same time, both filled. One was some sort of Ghost Hunter YouTube show. And there was another show. And the people there are rabid fans of that thing.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
In fact, I was standing there watching the guy, and there's four guys in a panel saying, hey, you want to see the next video? And the fans are screaming. Ah! And so they show the next video, and they're all excited. So what I really took away from it is how it's programming has changed dramatically since my youth, where we had three channels, three networks, and it was that. And everybody watched one of the three.
Gilligan's Island.
Now there's 1,000 niches. We're one of them.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
We're a niche broadcaster. Everybody's a niche broadcaster now. And so this you know, ghost hunting show had its real solid constituency. And to them, they were superstars up there on that stage. But the people on the next stage, I don't know who that is, but this is my, and the That's guy in the mask, he's got his things. So each of these is as famous to that constituency as Paul Newman would be to in
that
my
to me
generation.
Is the new scale of everything. It's the massive niches and things come down from this ridiculous scale that we all have to like the same thing to the smaller scale. The other session I loved there, I presume they still have it, is their mental health sessions.
Yeah, they have a lot of attention to mental health, to inclusion. I mean, it's very conscious, and of course that's probably because of John and Hank initially, right? And because they were very forward thinking in that regard. So yeah, it's good. You know, it's good, clean fun. It was very interesting. It feels very alien to a person of my generation because it's so different from the media landscape I grew up in. But it is. I mean, what's obvious is this is what TWiT is, you know, we have a small,
TWiT army.
Yeah, we have 700,000 unique listeners every month, right? That's our, and that's actually pretty big.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not compared to a Marques Brownlee or a Mr. Beast, but that's decent for a niche for new media. And I think it's certainly enough to make a living on. Mr. Beast was not there because, weirdly, Ken Lyon was at the same time. What is Ken Lyons? It's the International Festival of Creativity.
Oh, Ken Lyons. Oh, Ken. Yeah, that's the advertising industry.
So that's where Mr. Beast and Emma Chamberlain and all the big shots were.
Jeez. This has always been a problem for VidCon, is that they occur just by happenstance. They occur at the same time, and so VidCon's been trying. Because I was on the industry advisory board for a few years. Trying to get the advertising executives to come and respect this kind of creator video is always the quest for them.
Yeah, and of course, here's Shira Lazar's pictures from the French Riviera. You know, she's at Cannes Lions. You know, the Wall Street Journal's at Cannes Lions, right? So this is the problem. This is, you know, there's two sets of creators and they're split. And the ones who are most successful are probably in France. I hate to tell you. Mm-hmm. They're not.
Yeah, because who would not go to the French Riviera as opposed to L.A.?
Well, it's also where the money is, you know. Yes, the fans are at VidCon.
Right.
But the money's at Cannes Lions. Over there.
Was John Green there?
I didn't see him. And as I mentioned before the show began, I didn't know this, but later read an article that said, oh, actually, all the action wasn't at the conference center, at the Anaheim Convention Center. All the action was over at the Hyatt a few blocks away where that was where the creators stayed. And in fact, when the CEO of TikTok came to VidCon, they sponsored it last year. They were the key sponsor last year. YouTube's back again this year as sponsor. But when the CEO of TikTok came, he didn't even go to Anaheim Convention Center. He went to the Hyatt. So really, maybe we didn't see the best of VidCon.
That was not the case when I went.
I think that's changed.
The hotels were right there. I think it's correct.
And only 50,000 attendees, I think, was the final number. It was small. It's smaller than it's been in years past. COVID hurt it. I'm sure it's coming back. I don't, or maybe not, because one of the problems with being all these niche shows is there's no central place to go, right?
Yeah, and Hank tried. He announced this at VidCon some years ago, where he wanted the Creators Guild. He wanted to create a union around creators, and he couldn't get it going on the negotiation side.
Yeah,
it's trying to bring together a critical mass of creators.
Yeah,
and that's what VidCon really stands for.
It was very interesting. I mean, I don't feel like any obligation to go, and certainly no one. It was no one had any idea who Lisa or I were. Right. I mean, TWiT, nobody, we are right. So old school.
Right. Why and, would they?
Well, that's because in some ways we're part of the creator ecosystem.
What panel was Lisa on?
Yeah.
She was on an industry panel on B2B, B2B creators. And of course, the consensus there was LinkedIn. You got to be on LinkedIn. You got to do your stuff on LinkedIn. And I was like,
when you showed Shira, I was thinking, I always see her on LinkedIn. We follow each other.
The B2B people, LinkedIn is probably a good place to be, although I don't know. All right, quickly, because no one cares, it's time for the Google changelog.
Oh, that
I can really sell it, can't I?
There's a changelog?
I sold that good.
A spinoff.
Woo! YouTube Music now automatically adds songs to your last playlist.
Crickets.
Google introduces a new shop tab for rentals and purchases on Android TV. This is Google's response to the fact that they took away the Google Play Store, right? You can't buy TV and movies on the Google Play Store, so they are now going to add this slowly to Android TV. If you want to buy movies or TV shows, that's where you're going to do it, and it will also show anything you've already purchased or purchased in the past from Google Play Movies and TV. Or YouTube, or Google TV, or Android TV. I really think that Google, Chromecast with Android TV is quite good. Or is it the Google Chromecast with Google TV? I can never.
Yeah, I get so confused.
One of them is really good. I have no idea which. Google Search is rolling out a perspectives filter for more personal and human results.
This is because
this is part of SGE, right?
I think it's also part of the Reddit problem.
Oh, this is a response to the lack of input from Reddit. If Reddit goes away, because, of course, everybody knows the real way to do a good Google search is to add the word Reddit to the end of whatever you're searching.
Which I never knew.
Yeah.
How could you not know this?
I know. I mean, like, I'm on the show.
Even the best results. Like, even when you Google things, you have to scroll through all the crap, and eventually you'll find something that looks like it might work for you, and it's usually on Reddit.
I think it's really interesting, Stacey, that you said, and I agree with you, that Google search results have gone to hell.
Oh, they're terrible.
They really are. And I've been looking for a replacement, but I don't know what it is. Is it DuckDuckGo?
I don't think it's Google's fault. It's the web's fault. And it's going to get worse. There's a story I put on the rundown that basically warns us that when LLMs are going to fill up the web.
Yeah, there's a lot of crap out there. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's both, though. I think Google also has decided that they want to feature. I mean, search results have gone below the fold, the clickable links.
Yeah. I mean, right? Like, if I click the top result for anything I search for just out of habit because I'm an idiot, that's just wrong. Don't ever do that. Well, you'll just not end up where you want to be.
Google is updating. See, we now have to cover Android because of the no more all about Android. So here you go. Google is updating the Android logo with a 3D robot head.
Really?
Sure. They put a shadow that's on exciting. It. They put a freaking drop
you,
shadow
you put
on
that?
It
We've got 90 minutes in this show, and that's what you put
All
in?
Right, All right, let's move on. Google is giving Find My Device a new logo. Okay, you know what? That's it for the Google changelog. The hell with it. All right, last chance.
The last drum.
Last chance. I'd like to wrap this up. Anything? I see a lot of stuff you added, Jeff. Is there anything?
Was there some news about Google in Canada?
Canada forces Google Facebook. And Facebook to pay news outlets for linking to articles. This is the Leistung Gebühr.
Leistung Gebühr.
I can never say that.
And as a result, Meta says, all right, fine. No more news for you, Canada.
No news for you. And meanwhile, it's just a mess. I put up a really good column somebody wrote, Michael Geist, who's been covering this all along.
C18.
Right after this is announced, the Toronto Star Company, formerly Torstar, and Post Media, which is the conglomerate that's taken everything up, announced they're going to merge, basically taking away all competition in news. They pushed for this law, and there's going to be less news all around. Facebook's not going to link to news. There's going to be no competition. It's the TV stations are now trying to push hard to take away their requirement for local news or reduce it. It's a bloody mess. And it all comes because the hedge fund owned big companies and investor companies went after their political. They bought their votes to get this protectionism, and it's a disaster. And what's happening is I submitted a letter to the California Senate. Because the California Journalism Protection Act, or not protection, Preservation Act, is, I think, coming up for debate this week. And it's a disaster like the Canadian one, like the JCPA, which is the one in Congress. It's bakshish for news companies, full disclosure. Google gives money to my school, but it's still stupid. It's dangerous. It's as bad as that hot dog.
It's not bad. It's good. It's just.
I mean, that hot dog could be dangerous.
This is the Rupert Murdoch of hot dogs. It just it just will not die. plot twist. I would be remiss if I didn't cover what is turning out to be the worst corporate mismanagement. Warner Brothers Discovery.
Oh, man.
God, what a mess they're making of everything. The latest is Turner Classic Movies, which is arguably the greatest gift to movie lovers ever, especially in the Marvel cinema, Star Wars universe world of movies. Warner has now fired the five most senior executives at TCM through a mix of buyouts and pink slips. Warner Brothers Discovery, we need a new name for this, The Evil Empire, how about that, has promised the viewers would see no change to TCM. The management's all gone, but there's no change. The channel will remain free of ads, but it's losing money like crazy. We remain fully committed to this business.
Producers came for an emergency meeting with Zaslav.
Ugh. I swear, I think I saw The Office on Netflix again recently.
No one knows if TCM will survive or not. I pray that it continues. Ryan Reynolds said he told his 21 million followers on Twitter, TCM was a fixture in his life. The channel is a holy corner of film history and a living, breathing library for an entire art form. Right on, Ryan. Mark Harris, a journalist and film historian, called the cuts a catastrophic talent purge. Patton Oswalt blamed David Zaslav, saying, you couldn't just leave this one alone. So far, you know, besides firing everybody, no changes. We'll see. Zaslav says, I keep TCM playing in my office. Okay, fine.
The new rumor is that Comcast will buy Discovery, MGM, whatever. But no, I'm sorry, not MGM, that's Amazon. But we'll buy this mess.
What a mess. Which means just so sad.
More antitrust than imaginable.
I guess it's I don't know what's going on. This is the other side of the VidCon story, which is, you know, media is changing dramatically and traditional mm-hmm. media yeah. is in a tizzy.
The end of the mass, my friends. The end of the mass.
Succession.
Yeah. Who will win the cage match between Zuck and Musk?
Oh, gosh.
I would say that Zuck, what did we say? He did the Murphy?
He did the Murphy, yeah.
I mean, that's a tough.
I would have put my money on
he's Zuckerberg got this kid, besides the fact that he's like 10 years younger or more, Stacey's 20 dying. Years younger. This is quick. This is almost
like
over.
Godzilla versus Mothra.
Mothra? I don't even want to talk Mothra. About it, except I think
they're, Mothra.
I think they're close. Serious. I think they're serious about a cage match. Just the other day, Lex Friedman, the podcaster and MIT genius, posted.
Okay, these people are all just getting in on this for the media clout.
Oh, they're horrible.
I cannot believe we're.
This is the lowest. Wait, I'm going to give them their time. It was at the bottom. It's below the fold. Lex Friedman posted video of him wrestling Elon Musk.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's wrong with these people?
Oh, gosh.
Have you not heard the update on this story?
Oh, what's the latest?
Mr. Benito.
Elon's mom came out and said, like, no, this isn't happening.
Yeah, his mom.
Oh,
yeah.
Elon's ass would get whooped.
But his mom came and saved him.
I think his mom should come in and beat up Zuck. Should at least give him a stern talking to, right?
Or Zuck's deadest dad.
Lord.
I mean,
what's
Zuck
wrong
is
with these people?
Arguably the lesser of two evils.
He is.
Here.
He's definitely.
Isn't that a sad statement?
Makes him look good.
When Mark Zuckerberg looks good? Because Elon's
he doesn't look
so
good.
Horrific.
He's just. He's just the lesser of two evils. But yeah, what the hell? No, this is just boys' ego, stupid.
Yep. Testosterone.
You know.
Skip.
What are we gonna do though? Boys are there's 50% of the world is boys.
How much of the power is boys?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You fix that.
Let's not get into this.
Stacey will never get to dinner.
Well, all right. Elon Musk mom can't stop the Mark Zuckerberg cage fight. Let us do your pick of the week so that you can go on to things much more worthy of your time, Stacey.
Oh, well, no. We can do... Well, actually, no. You know what? Yes.
It's your, time. Now is your time. I'm sorry. Do you have anything? Do you not want to talk?
I brought
two things. I brought a Pixel tablet. I brought those TP-Link Wi-Fi
and the hot dog.
Switches.
He brought the hot dog.
And
bring the hot dog.
A plastic hot dog. And I even ate it. And nothing from you, Stacey.
It's
nothing.
Glued to that bun.
I've got gear,
it's not
but
flopping
I haven't
off
tested
the bun.
It yet. So I don't want to show it till next week.
Okay, save
so
it.
So I'm like, wait.
My thing of the week is this hot dog.
That thing just...
It doesn't look right, does it?
No. No, it does not.
It's not right.
It's not right. It's just too perfect.
I don't know if I'd say perfect.
Perfect is not the word.
The hell is that, man?
And what did you have for lunch today?
I had burgers. I had like burgers and onion rings.
I'm never ordering a hot dog again. That's
oh, man. And it was good.
Jeff, what's your number of the week? And oh, it's a oh, big one. Oh, oh. I know this is a big one.
Oh, you want that one?
Well, you give me any one you want.
Well, that's fine. It's there was arguments about this. It is said that the typical OpenAI engineer makes $925,000. Now, of course, that's not salary. It's a base of $300 and $625 in stock-based compensation for a stock that has no actual real set value in the real world yet.
Okay.
But be that as it may, they're filthy rich, these people. Unless the company goes zoom.
Okay, they're filthy rich on paper. I've been filthy rich on paper, or my husband has, rather. But we need to split our assets.
You have.
And you know what we ended up buying with that after we had the dot-com bust?
What?
We bought dining room chairs in a program that bought back the shares because they didn't want to have more than 500 shareholders outstanding.
Wow.
So for a while, we were millionaires.
Oh, yeah.
And
I remember.
We had six dining room chairs.
I remember going to.
And we were grateful for those chairs.
Tech TV gave us shares. And I remember going into the CEO's office. And I think this was illegal. And he was writing numbers. He said, if the company's worth this much, you're going to be worth. This it was like $10 million or something.
It was like the bell at dinner time. You started salivating.
I started salivating, and it was all a lie, you know.
It's not a lie. It's just, it's paper value.
Well, what happened was, like this happens a lot of times, the lead investor, who was Paul Allen, got to be made whole before anybody else saw any value to the stock. So I had actual stock, but Paul got his, because he lost his shirt, he got his money first, which meant I got nothing. I got diddly squat when Comcast.
I've gotten so much advisor shares. Leo, can I ask you to do one more thing with this story? Can you put the camera on your screen there or go to that story?
I know my thing. Okay, but then y'all talk about
okay, I'm on the story. I have a picture of Sam Altman.
Yeah, so now just mouse over the Twitter share or click on the Twitter share.
All right. Purchase a link to this subscriber-only article allows anybody to view the content for $895.
Isn't that insane?
What is this? InnoBizJournals.com.
It's BizJournal. It's my old employer's. It's Newhouse.
It was my old employer, too.
Oh, really?
Did you have any stock in Newhouse?
Because
at $895,
you can't have stock in it because it's a family.
Oh,
yeah, it's a family-owned thing.
It's science.
So you can give a free link to a truncated article, or you can buy it where anybody can read it for $895.
Damn.
Do you think anybody buys that?
No.
I mean, I might pay a dollar so 10 people could click on it, or maybe $10 so 100 people could click on it.
Here's the free. Here, by the way, I got the free link. And it's got, you know, the lead and it's got a link. But if I click that link, will it be just say, oh, sorry, you can't read this?
It'll be what you got. It'll be what I gave you. It's the first two paragraphs. It's all you need to know.
Oh, I didn't even know I wasn't getting the whole article.
See? You don't care. You didn't care.
I didn't care.
This article's for members, suckers only. I mean, members only.
By the way, one thing that drives me nuts about Mastodon, I love Mastodon, but whenever I put up a link to the Washington Post or the New York Times or whatever, paywall. I know.
If you do it on Reddit, they'll Mastodon needs to do a deal like Reddit, where if you just log in, you get like 7 articles for free.
I just steal my articles by typing archive.ph in front.
No comment.
Hey, I found my thing, by the way. I remember what it was. I should probably put it in the things when
No. What is your thing, doll?
Before the show.
Give us your thing,
doll. Oh, my God. I am going to smack you in. I need you. Please do a punch.
Wee. I'm sorry. Yeah. The ketamine just kicked in. Just go right ahead, please.
Oh, no, the hot dog kicked in.
It's microdosed hot dogs, though. Didn't you see that?
So you're arguing that you were delusional when you
Yeah, he's not. The Supreme Court says it's not his fault. He didn't know.
Because again, I think I'm going to need that punch.
Just punch me, and it'll make her feel better.
Yeah, here we go.
Hit
the button. Hit the button,
Stacey.
Oh, God. Okay. Thank you, Aunt.
I'm sorry.
We needed some serious negative reinforcement.
My mouth was watering. Eyes are watering.
All right. So my thing this week that I forgot completely about because I didn't put it in the link, my bad, is NanoLeaf released something that is only cool for people who like are really into television or gaming. But if you're into it, it's actually a very affordable way to do ambient lighting. So it's the NanoLeaf 4D screen mirror and light strip kit. And this is what this does is you stick this over your TV. It's got a little camera that's like processing the colors of what's on the television. And then the light strip mimics.
Oh, it's a bias light. That's bias lighting. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. I was like, Hugh Sync has done this for a while, but to get something like this, you have to pay like, it's like $400 to get the lighting and everything and the sync box. But this is actually for a 65-inch light strip in the little camera. It is only $99, $100.
That's pretty cool.
And then an 85-inch light strip is like $120.
Oh, this is really, have you done this?
So I've done it with the Hue.
Yeah.
So I haven't tried this one out yet because it's not going to ship until July. But if this is something you're interested in, I love the NanoLeaf lighting. The camera's pretty cool. They have a little privacy thing if you're worried about it taking. So there's two ways they deal with privacy with this camera that like overlooks your TV, which admittedly is a little unattractive. They let you cover it, or they also don't do any processing except like in the cloud. It's all local on the device.
I trust them. What is NanoLeaf going to do with my information anyway?
Well, I mean, sure they can't really
a lot of YouTube.
They're basically know what you're watching on TV, but they won't know that because none of that data goes to the cloud. They're literally just saying, these are the colors on the screen. Quickly mimic it to the thing.
I might actually do
this. That's pretty cool.
I've always wanted to do bias lighting.
Yeah.
And this is an inexpensive way to implement it. You do have to have that camera looking at your TV.
Well, it's like dark mode. Yeah.
How is it like dark mode?
Jeff, it's do you
like
watch
cool.
TV with all the lights on?
Yeah. He probably does.
Oh, man.
Unbelievable.
The other cool thing, and I didn't know this was a thing because I'm not a gamer. They actually synced their lights with Overwatch.
Oh.
Which.
That's cool.
Yeah, so when you get kills, it'll like turn
flash blood red.
It's like fun colors.
Oh, great.
And if you die, it'll flash it red. And I'm like, why don't we have like an API like this for sports?
Yeah, you shouldn't need the camera. It should just be sending that information down the pipe.
It should light up all
like 10
around.
Years ago.
That'd have been awesome.
And what happened? Did the TV company didn't go along with it or?
It was a lot of integration on the media side. And so it was very custom it wasn't basically scalable. But now you can this is actually using computer vision and AI to quickly say, oh, these colors will work here. Go. And they can do it rapidly enough.
I'm a sucker. I'm going to buy this because
it's neat.
I like this idea.
I've spent a lot of money.
And they have the four different layers. They have like.
Yeah. Well, I have two. It's been expensive. All right. And I'm going to get it for the bigger up to 85 inches. I mean,
you have other NanoLeaf lights, it'll sync to those as well in the room.
I might be headed toward NanoLeaf heaven.
Yeah, so if you got a new media room or you got the new couch or what did you get? You got reclining chairs?
We got home theater seating.
Tip out that space, man.
We got home theater seating for our bedroom.
Oh.
Dude, that's a so, living. You invite in an audience? What?
That's living right there.
Come on over.
Watch Leo snore.
It's got they're heated. It's got massagers in them.
Watch Leo snore.
Watch me snore.
That's hilarious.
It's a long story. Lisa says we should do a reality show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You should.
I had to take down the ceiling swing, though, because I didn't. They were. Oh, I should probably talk about that.
Ant is like edging away. He's like, no.
Yeah. Yeah.
No. Ooh.
Oh, boy.
Oh, dude. I'm busy buying these lights. Okay, Stacy, that's a good thing.
Oh, gosh.
And I will, I'm going to put these in the bedroom right
now. Jammer
B
is saying, no, we shouldn't buy this for some reason.
You shouldn't buy this?
I mean, his mind has a rage face going right now.
Why should I not buy this?
Scott Wilkinson does not approve.
Do you remember what Scott Wilkinson has told you about bias lights?
What has Scott Wilkinson told me about bias lights?
They should be $6,500K.
They should not sink. They should be $6,500K.
Yeah, and sinking will just distract you and ruin your.
Or the whole room will feel like immersive. All right, I won't push the button.
Ask Scott Wilkinson.
I will ask Scott when
he
he's
did
on
just talk
at
about
home
this
theater
on Home
Geeks.
Theater Geeks like this last
bias week. Bias lighting. So for him, bias lighting is just a neutral light behind the TV, not attempting to match the content of the TV, which is what this does.
Yeah, that'll be distracting. He's right.
No, man.
They do.
It's immersive.
They have different levels of it, though. So you could actually have what sounds to be bias lighting at the lowest level.
Well, it's okay because I'm sending it to my mother for some reason. I don't know why. Mom enjoyed the bias lighting.
Okay. She's like, you sent me a camera and lights, Lee?
Mom has a disco party.
Saturday night watching college football and the band strikes up when a touchdown is scored.
Wouldn't that be great?
I think that would be pretty daggum cool.
Da, 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 da,
I think it'd be neat for nature documentaries.
Yeah.
But that's just me.
Oh.
You
yeah.
know, you're like,
all right, I'll ask right. Scott yeah. first. You're nature. Right. Thank you. You stopped me from sending this to my mom. and do you have a pick?
What was my pick?
I know what it was. Sony ZV-E1.
Oh, yeah. Sony ZV-E1.
Is this a vlogging camera?
Yeah, that's one of their latest vlog, quote-unquote, cameras, but it's full frame. It recently got a software update for video where Ooh. You can now shoot 4K, 120 frames a second.
Ooh.
And HD shoot 240 frames a second, which pretty much puts it on par with their... With their FX cameras.
Yeah, or their Alpha Z S3s. Yeah.
So you can get a decent video camera for a lot less money.
And it'll probably use my FX lenses, right? It should.
Yeah, they're all E-mount usually. So
Oh, that's cool.
That's a heck of a deal right there.
So this is a firmware update if you've already got it. If you don't, do you use this? Do you have it?
I don't have it, but I don't have a problem with Sony cameras.
Oh, I love my Sonys. Yeah.
They're pretty nice.
Yeah.
But yeah, they have a firmware update, just in case you're curious. But my pick is totally random. It's called Beamer Code.
Beamer Code? Does it involve Beamers?
Yeah, it involves BMW. If you have a BMW or a Mini and you want to play around with your car and its software, Beamer Code allows you to connect to your OBD with a particular OBD dongle.
Yeah.
And you can play around with some of the things because with my car, I recently had some issues with my daytime running lights and I got tired of seeing an error until I fixed the light and I found Beamer Code and it allowed me to go in there and turn that error off.
Nice.
Until I fixed the light.
So, this is your new BMW that you just got.
Yeah, I had it for a little while.
It's nice. It looks very fancy.
Yeah.
Because of you and my wife who has a Mini.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking maybe my next EV will be a BMW.
The BMW EVs are sharp.
Oh,
yeah, they are sharp.
I'm thinking. With all that money I saved on the hands-on photography, I think it's time to upgrade. No, see, that's what people think, isn't it? That's what they think.
Yeah, that's what it is. And I know it ain't the case.
That ain't the case.
But yeah, Beamer Code.
I think, Leo, it's a Kia for
a visibility. Kia.
A Kia.
a Kia.
A Kia.
Not
I'm
going
to drive an IKEA car. Do I have to assemble it myself?
I would do that.
Yeah, I like my car.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you are not a member of the club, you're missing out because tomorrow is a very big day. Stacy's book club is at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern time. Anna Lee Newitz's latest, The Terraformers.
Yep.
I hear it's a good book. I haven't read it.
We'll find out tomorrow if Ant liked it or not.
I have no comment.
Oh, it's going to be a surprise.
No comment.
It's going to be a surprise. John loved it. We know that. Then at 1 p.m., we know everybody loves Silo, the new Apple TV Plus series, which concludes Friday.
How about Apple putting that first episode out to the public for
everybody?
It's on
Twitter. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Isn't that wild?
That's marketing. Here, let me give you a taste of it.
What's funny is the first three episodes are nothing like the rest of the show. Like, there's a big thing happens. The people who are in the first episode, I don't want to spoil it.
Yeah.
But it changes dramatically. And then, they're not the stars? Oh, okay.
Yeah. Such a good show.
It is good. And the books that it's based on, the Wool series, will be the topic tomorrow. As Ant interviews the author, Hugh Howey. That's exciting.
Man. It's so crazy.
1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern. That is a great get, and I am thrilled to watch it. You should call it Triangulation. You should. You should, because that's really what it is. You're interviewing a sci-fi author.
I guess so.
Tune in for that. That's one of many things we do in the club. These are club exclusives because we want to make you feel bad that you're not in the club, really. We want you to think, gosh, I'm missing all the... We still offer all these shows for free, ad-supported. But if you want ad-free versions of all the existing shows, if you want special content created just for the club, and honestly, the real reason they're in the club is because club members are paying for it.
Yep.
They're supporting it. Stuff that we can't sell ads on because it's one-off, like that Hugh Howey interview, or it doesn't have a sufficient audience. Home Theater Geeks, we had to cancel it with Scott Wilkinson. Mm-hmm. But we could bring it back thanks to you. Club members.
Yep.
So I think it's a very, very fair $7 a month. Gets you ad-free versions of all the shows, gets you a bunch of shows we don't put out in public, like Hands on Macintosh, Hands on Windows, Scott's Home Theater Geeks, The Untitled Linux Show, The Giz Fizz, Stacy's Book Club. I mean, it goes on and on. We're making the club a great place to be. You also get access to the Discord, which is the best social network ever because it's filled with club members only. And many of our hosts hang out in there.
And lots and lots of gifts.
Yes.
There's no gifts. But there are gifts.
Great art.
Yes, animated.
Joe Esposito.
Yes. Joe has done some great stuff this episode. Anyway, $7 a month. Twit.tv/clubtwit.
What's Your Thing doll is now memorialized.
Oh, no. Did he really? Did he do that?
Yeah. He's quick. Yeah. Get it, Joe.
I'm in such trouble.
You gotta show it.
Such trouble.
You gotta show it.
Yeah, okay, I'm going back here.
There it is.
So it's a poster. It says, "What's your thing, doll?" And I have a black eye and some missing teeth, which is pretty much what Stacy's dream come true.
I mean, was I more like incredibly offended?
No, yes. You're used to it now. You were mortally offended.
Not mortally, but I was like, mother plucker. I should just get up and leave. That dick.
Well, you'd been dissing the guys for the whole show. I thought I could send one your way, but maybe I made a mistake. I apologize.
Maybe. Punch maybe. Up?
I was doing it more in a 20s kind of gangster kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Noir. It was twit noir.
Let me just take that shovel from you now.
It's like, let me just tell you something, guy.
Join the club for more of this hilarity. Twit.tv/clubtwit.
Thank you.
We thank all of our members. About 1% of our audience has joined. We would like to get
Should
that to
be
5%.
At least 10.
Yeah. 10 would, if we had 10, we would, you know, we would do more shows. We would probably have no ads. It would be a very different thing.
True.
That's the kind of thing we need to keep going because it is getting really tough out here, especially because of me.
We'd go to Disneyland as a company all together.
Yeah, we'll take
big
you all.
Parties.
I worked for iHeart. They had a Disneyland takeover. They did the whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I didn't go. Whoa. What a moron. I was thinking, gosh, I had to wait an hour for every single ride.
No.
Every single ride, at least an hour. Anyway, thank you, everybody. We really appreciate your support. This show goes on every Tuesday, 2 p.m. Pacific, Wednesday, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern, 2100 UTC. Watch it live at live.twit.tv. There's audio or video, so you can listen live as well. If you're watching or listening live, chat live at irc.twit.tv. Open to all. You can use your browser to go there. After the fact, on-demand, ad-supported versions of the show at the website, twit.tv/twig. That website also has links to various podcast players, so you can subscribe. And you can also, I think, go to YouTube. I think there's a full, there's a YouTube channel dedicated to This Week in Google. However you do it, please come back each and every week and watch as I get slowly beaten to a pulp by Stacey and Ant. I apologize for anything I might have said. I blame the microdosing. Thank you, everybody, and we'll see y'all next week on This Week in Google. Bye!
Yeah, and that was exactly 90 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah. We take out.
It's midweek, and you really want to know even more about the world of technology. So you should check out Tech News Weekly, the show where we talk to and about the people making and breaking the tech news.
It's the biggest news. We talk with the people writing the stories that you're probably reading. We also talk between ourselves about the stories that are getting us even more excited about tech news this week.
So if you're excited, well, then join us. Head to twit.tv/TNW to subscribe.